the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
I mean, the game is coming. It essentially is just 2 days away.
Do you have any word on the weather for the game?
I haven't looked yet. That's something I can look at today. What have you heard?
I haven't heard anything. I know it's sunny down there right now in New Jersey. I can tell you that.
Would you rather be up here? Is that what you're
saying? No, I'm just saying, you know, I know it's sunny down there. Hopefully they get... you know, some good weather conditions for the game on Thursday. I think it's going to be a good game, to be honest with you, Thursday night, because I think the Jets are playing like a team that has nothing to lose, and those guys are out there just playing hard every week, you know, and they're losing games. They're very close games. They're having some calls go against them, and it's the reason that they've lost their games. But I think Todd Bowles has done a good job of getting these guys just mentally prepared for the season and ready to go, you know, so that they're not listening to anybody outside those walls saying that the Jets are tanking.
There's no tank talk. I wouldn't say that, but I hear people say, oh, the Jets are playing well. You know what? The Jets have lost three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Three straight games. Boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a losing streak. And that, you know, they lost to New England, okay, and we all know how that game played out. We talked about that. They lost by three to Miami, by five to Atlanta. I guess I'm sure they're playing hard. They had a three-game win streak that preceded that against Miami, overtime against Jacksonville, and at Cleveland.
Right.
So they're playing hard. I'll give them that. I don't know that they're playing well. Can you lose three straight and say, we're playing pretty well?
No, I think, though, you can say this is a team that I don't know if teams want to play, you know, just because of how hard they're playing. I don't know if teams want to play the Jets, especially go into New York and have to play them on a short week, like all of that stuff. Now, they're obviously on a short week as well, but I don't know if this is a team that, like, teams week in and week out are like, man, this Jets team, we know it's a stat game.
Yeah.
You go into certain games as a player, and you're like, uh-oh, we're about to get some stats on this game. Like, I'm looking forward to it, maybe a couple of touchdowns, put up some big yards. This game is like, man, I might wake up Friday morning, and I'm like, oh, I'm hurting right now.
They're a good defense. I will give them that. I just checked the weather on Thursday during the day, partly cloudy skies, a high 69. So the low Thursday is going to be 58, 20% chance of rain, light winds. I don't think weather's going to be an issue. It'll probably be nice, cool, comfortable autumnal weather down there in New York on Thursday night.
All right.
We look forward to that. We look forward to the show, too. It's, as we said, an accelerated week, and we're going to do a lot today. We're going to try to accomplish a lot. You just heard from Chris Brown. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Tyrod Taylor met with the media earlier today, about an hour and a half ago. We'll get his comments, what he has to think about this matchup and where his game's at. Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. Donald spoke with him today while I was engaged with other things. You already spoke to him. What's up with Trey Wingo? There's a lot going on around the league, obviously.
It's a lot of stuff, a lot of trades going on around the league. I think it's the most active trade deadline in the NFL that I can remember.
Me too.
You know, and it might be ever. I think Adam Schefter tweeted that out. This is the most active trade deadline day ever in the NFL. And I don't know what that is, but it seems like we are in a transition period in this league where GMs are starting to look at everything differently now. And you can make trades on the trade deadline, and you don't have to just be complacent or content with the team that you have. You can make trades to try to make your team better. You're also seeing teams with the Bills, starting with the Bills, with Marcell Dareus, but now you look at Miami and, you know, them trading away Jay Ajayi, and it seems like they're trying to send a message by trading him away because he is your offense. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, without your starting quarterback, Jay Ajayi is really everything that you have. Matt Moore hasn't really been playing that well. You have some weapons on the outside, but everything starts with that running game down there, and they trade him away, and it seems to try to send the message, but now they're trying to trade away. Well, there are reports that they're looking at trading Jarvis Landry, and it's like, well, what message are you sending to your team when you have a Miami team that is still in the playoff race? You know, I don't know what they're doing down there.
I don't either. And there's something going on with Adam Gase down there. I have not – we're going to talk about these trades a lot today, but I am not I find myself not a fan of the way Adam Gase treats his team, quite frankly. He sells them out.
Yeah.
He throws them under the bus. He did it earlier this year. What did he say against or after one of their early season losses? Something about their offense was – they were struggling, no question about that.
Oh, yeah.
But he said like something about how I think they lost to the Jets 26, and he said our offense was terrible or – were worse.
He said something like, I'm tired of seeing this garbage offense.
Garbage offense. Like. Yeah, that's what he called it. He did that. You know, I watched with great interest the Thursday night game a week ago when they got shut out. They were terrible that day. But even Adam Gase on the sidelines, you know, rolling his eyes and throwing up his hands and basically, I think, embarrassing his Dolphins team. That's just not – you just don't do that in the
right.
NFL. And, you know, so what? He's mad at Jay Ajayi and he decides to trade him away today? Is that it? Is that all it takes? I'm not sure that they know what they're doing in Miami.
I'm sorry. If that was here, and let's just say, because Jay Ajayi is their offense. So let's just say the Bills decided, and the Bills are not doing this. So, you know, I don't want you guys to run with this, but the Bills decided we're going to trade LeSean McCoy away because, you know, of his attitude and all of that stuff. Then what message does that send to the rest of your team?
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, all right, what are we doing now? Like, are you trying to win or no? You know, I get that. You know, we can – the veterans in the locker room, we can talk to him and make sure that he's on board. But now you traded away the key piece to our offense.
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to do here? You're not trying to win a game at all.
We're, you know, the Bills will hook up with the Dolphins twice, right, in the last 3 weeks, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a lot about the Dolphins then, but I'm beginning to get the feeling that Adam Gase, who had a really good first year as the head coach, might be one of those coordinators, one of those play callers,
yeah.
one of those schematic guys who maybe doesn't understand players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got his call sheet and his plays, and he's done the research, and he's totally about, here's the call, here's how to beat him, this is what I'm calling, this is what we've repped up in practice, and doesn't even take a look at who's out there. I mean, he's got his head buried in the call
mm-hmm.
sheet oftentimes
all the
when
time.
You see him. It's about players. It really is, I think. It's about relationships with players. It's about motivating players. It's about getting players to understand what you're trying. It's about the kind of things. And, look, Bills aren't perfect, but I think they're a long way ahead of the Dolphins, it appears, in terms of the head coach relating to his players and knowing the – taking the temperature of his players and taking the pulse of what his team needs and how they play. I think it's – you don't want to – I don't think you want to – you can have a coordinator and do that, but you don't want a head coach who buries his head in the call sheet.
In the call sheet all the time.
And loses track
yeah.
of what's going on.
Of what's going on. You know, and the crazy thing is, last year I remember speaking to someone, one of the reporters down in Miami, and this was when, you know, Miami was like on a hot – they were on a streak, like four or five straight games they had won. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what is it with Adam Gase? How come he has this team rolling? And I remember them saying, you know, this team has bought into him, you know, and he seems to relate to these players and he seems to, you know, just understand everything that's going on around the team. He seems to take the temperature of the team. I remember, I can't remember who it was we were speaking to, but I remember them saying those words as I'm paraphrasing. But now it's like it's totally different, you
yeah.
know, because they went to the playoffs and now it's like, all right, you know, I took this team to the playoffs. Now I'm the man, and now I have to make sure that we're – and I don't know what it is. Maybe because he feels like, okay, we don't have our starting quarterback, so now I need to schematically try to scheme some things up on offense so that we can get this thing going. So that's all he's thinking about. But I'm sorry, you can't trade away the star of your team. You just can't. I understand you have wide receivers, but you don't even have a quarterback that's getting the ball to those wide receivers. And everything starts with the running game down there, so I don't know what they're doing.
A lot to talk about there. Let me finish telling you what's coming up. As we said, Trey Wingo will talk with Donald about some of these issues and the trades coming up at the 1 o'clock hour. We go from Trey to Trey because Trey Elston is going to join us after practice today. One of the heroes. It's Trey Day here at One Belt. We need Trey White to finish off the trifecta. Trey Elston, not Trey Davis White, will join us in studio when practice ends. His thought on his first NFL start, first NFL interception, and a couple of other issues. Donald's got nuts and bolts presented by Napa Auto Parts today. Kind of a you kind of take apart the nuts and bolts of the game. What are you going to be talking about today?
So today we're actually going to just look at some of Tyrod's scrambles, you know, and what he's doing in the pocket. I want to talk about the scramble rule a little bit and what you're supposed to do when the play is breaking down. As a wide receiver out there, you know, running up the field, coming back towards the quarterback. But that's what we're going to do today, just break down some of his scrambles, how he buys time to find open guys.
Okay. Nuts and bolts with Donald coming up at about 2 o'clock. We'll hear from LeSean McCoy at the podium coming up as well, and NFL true and false. And, of course, your participation is vital as we approach the Jets game coming up on Thursday. And you saw what happened today, right? Or you heard what happened over the last couple of days with what's the matter?
This guy, KC, tweeted me and said, GMs and coaches are younger and not scared to make trades. They play Madden. So.
Yeah. It's different. I mean, the trade deadline is different today. A couple of things about the trade deadline. Jay Ajayi, we talked about him, goes from the Dolphins to the Eagles for a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
The report from ESPN says the Dolphins believe his most productive games are behind him. They're worried about the knee injury that he had in 2011, catching up with him. But in the middle of the season, I mean, the kind of the bell cow running back, maybe we have a higher opinion than Jay Ajayi than most people in the NFL because we saw him trample the Bills not once,
but twice
last year. Maybe.
But I don't know. When you look at the national coverage of what they did, it's like breaking news. The Dolphins just traded Jay Ajayi for a fourth-round pick this morning. It was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, did that happen? You see it, a bunch of tweets that, whoa, the big eye emoji tweets and all of that stuff. Like,
that means it's serious.
This is serious. This is breaking news, guys. Yeah. This is one of the biggest stories. Last night was a big story with Garoppolo.
Were there breaking this or there this, big eye emojis on the Garoppolo thing?
To be honest with you, I sent out the big eye emojis this morning.
Okay, you got the ball rolling on that one.
But last night, I'm sure it was for Garoppolo. Yeah, because when I saw the alert come to my phone, I'm like, wow, they just traded Garoppolo? I didn't expect that at all.
No.
You know, I'm like, I know Tom Brady has said he wanted to play into his 40s, but, you know, I thought that the Patriots would just hang on to Garoppolo any way that they could until Brady is done or he shows signs of being done. They trade him away to the 49ers for a second-round pick. They traded him for a second-round pick, a guy that hasn't really played in this league.
Yeah. That trade surprised me. You know what really surprised our guest yesterday, Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack? Remember yesterday he sat right over there, and we talked about some of his trade deadline deals all related to the cap. And we briefly touched on Garoppolo, and I think he said they're not trading Garoppolo. And I think we all, like, nod our heads. I believe that, too. They're not trading
Garoppolo.
And
5 hours later.
Well, I got a text from Mike last night at 8:15. Let me rephrase that. I absolutely think the Patriots will trade Garoppolo. So all of us, I think, taken aback by that. I just saw that Brady's going to play forever, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The Garoppolo trade obviously could have been made in the offseason and wasn't. You know, the clock's ticking. His contract's going to run out. But I don't know why now. I mean, it does. Right. They're going to get Brian Hoyer. The reports are once the Niners finally consummate the trade, they will release Brian Hoyer, and the speculation is Hoyer will wind up in New England. I don't get it from New England's perspective. They've left themselves vulnerable short term. I mean, if Brady gets hurt. Right? Haven't they?
Yeah.
Haven't they left themselves a little vulnerable?
I'm sorry.
Here?
I mean, you're bringing over Brian Hoyer. If that, you know, comes to fruition, you're bringing over Brian Hoyer. But, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's been in your system for some years now and understands what you're trying to do. So, yeah, I don't get it from their perspective either, what they've seen in Garoppolo to feel like, you know what, we can just let him go. And I would love to speak to somebody from New England at some point here soon to see, you know, what the thinking is up there. But I think, yeah, they've left themselves vulnerable because you're one hit away from having a quarterback in Brian Hoyer who does not know your system.
Yeah.
You know, and now has to come in, step in, and make plays. You traded away Jacoby Brissett, and now you traded away Garoppolo. And it's like, what is going on up there?
I don't know.
This whole season, starting back in March from the Patriots with paying all of this money to bring all of this talent on this team, which is not what they're, you know, traditionally doing up in New England. They're not usually spending all types of money to get players there. And now to trade away your backup quarterback, which everybody was like, they love Garoppolo, especially when his stock, his trade stock, was its highest in the offseason.
Right.
You know, letting him go in the offseason, that was – you probably could have got a first-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. And a second-round pick or something like that, you know. And now you wait until the middle of the season where your team is 6-2. You're always one hit away from your quarterback going down. You trade him away, and you only got now one second-round pick. So I don't get what they're doing.
I don't understand that. We'll talk about that. Donald will talk about that with Trey Wingo coming up a little bit later on the show. And we want to engage you because, you know, the trade deadline, as Donald said, as we all, I think, feel, it's like hockey all of a sudden. You know, it's more interesting and more movement than we've seen in a long time, especially, it seems, in the AFC East. I mean, the Bills made their move last Friday night, right, sending Marcell Dareus off to Jacksonville. The Patriots ship off Jimmy Garoppolo, which would seem to have more of a long-term, long-range impact than maybe short-term. We'll see. And, of course, Jay Ajayi leaving immediately from Miami to Philadelphia with an immediate impact, one would think. The deadline is 4. For the record, I don't think the Bills have anything in the works before 4, but – we've been wrong on this. I've been wrong on this a lot. So let's see. I don't think there's anything in the works. People are looking at Cordy Glenn and Jimmy Graham and all these names floating around. I don't think there's anything in the works for anything for the Bills before four today.
I don't.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely could be wrong. I don't think there's anything in the works, but at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked because there are probably teams, as it's the trade deadline, so teams are calling all around trying to figure out, just get the temperature of what you're thinking. Hey, man, you know, what's going on with Cordy Glenn? What's going on with Ashantaro Henderson? You know, what would you want to give up? So I'm sure they're fielding those calls, and they've done it in the past. You know, yeah. It's not like they're actively shopping guys, but they're fielding calls, and if that call comes in and it's – enticing enough for them, they might pull the trigger.
Might.
And they've shown the signs that they will do that. They're right. Not afraid to do it. So don't be shocked if something did happen.
So what do you think of these deals, though, especially when it comes to Ajayi to the Eagles, Garoppolo to the Niners, Marcel to Jacksonville? That's our Twitter poll today. Have these trade deadline deals improved the Bills' chances of making the playoffs? I know it's kind of general. We're just letting the dust settle on this, but that's the question we're asking on Twitter. Have the trade deadline deals improved, enhanced the Bills' chances of making the playoffs? Give us a call. Let's talk about it. 803-0550 is the number. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. And the early returns here on that question on Twitter, 47%, about half of you say maybe a little bit, it's improved their chances. 28% say nope, no impact at all. And 25% say yes, a great deal. I don't know. I think I would vote for maybe a little bit. And the main one, as far as this year, making the playoffs this year, it would be Ajayi. You know, that's the one where there will be immediate impact, I would think. And, yeah, because of what he did against the Bills last year. A couple of tweets on this already. Dave Dent says, Ajayi is hands down the most overrated back in the league. He had three good games last year and got hyped up. The problem here is two of those games were against the Buffalo Bills, against the old defense. Bill Swan tweets in, Jay Ajayi only produces against Rex Ryan defenses. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, that might be the case because, you know, he had those two games against us last year. But, you know, I do think that they have a decent offensive line down there, and I think that he had gelled with that offensive line and they had things going. I just don't know what they see in him. Obviously, you have the injuries. Maybe it's work ethic. Maybe that's something that they just don't like. And they were like, we got to get, you know, move on from this guy. You know, we can get a fourth round, a round pick back in return for him. But that trade does shock me because I don't think it sends a good message to your locker room, even when it seems like you're trying to send a message to your locker room that, look, you're gonna work hard, you're not going to be here. I don't think it sends a good message because people are like, look, we understand that he wasn't the hardest worker, but not now. Like, come on, man. We're trying to win games here and make it to the playoffs. Like, don't do it now.
Strange. And we wonder if you think it has enhanced or improved the Bills' chances of making the playoffs. Give us a call. We'll talk about it.
I think in terms of our Twitter poll, has it enhanced or improved the Bills' chances to make the playoffs? I think because you play the Dolphins – later in the season, two games in the last 3 weeks of the season, I think now, you know, you have to look at those games and say, look, the Bills should win those games, especially the one here and the one down there.
Hold, we've talked about this. You can't project out to December 17th.
You can't. But that's what we're doing in the Twitter poll.
I'm trying to stop you from yourself.
Well, this is what we're doing in the Twitter poll. We're saying, has it improved your chances? So we got to look at the games that they're going to play each other.
All right.
And so you'd have to think that, you know, that who's their running backs now? You know, can they still run the ball against this defense that is very good against the run? And they don't even have Jay Ajayi. You would have to think, and, you know, they don't have their starting quarterbacks. They're supposed to get, Jay Cutler back at some point here soon. But, you know, by that time, he's already packed it in. All right, my season is over. I made my $10 million. He's on the phone back with the networks. Hey, can I come back?
Yeah.
With three games left. Can I come back? I'm in Buffalo right now.
You need anybody for this week?
But you need anybody? I need to come back. So, you know, I think those two games you would think you should win, especially if you're trying to compete for a division title or something like that. You know, you need to win those games, especially when they don't have their star player.
Let us know what you think. We're going to get to your phone calls in a moment. Have the trade deadline deals in the AFC East especially, have they helped the Bills' playoff chances? give us a call. 803-0550 is the number to call, and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Hey, this note, Friday night, 9 o'clock, NFL Network will air A Football Life with Jim Kelly, obviously the Bills Hall of Fame quarterback. Somebody tweeted in, any chance you're going to have Jim Kelly on before his Football Life airs on Friday night? The answer is yes. 2 o'clock tomorrow, right? You're going to have Jim Kelly? You're doing the show. I'll be en route to New York.
You'll be en route to New York. Looking forward to it, talking to him about that show that's going to air on Friday.
Friday night, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's going to air on Friday. And just talk to him. I'll be on with Steve Tasker as well. And it'll be fun to just watch these two guys talk about, you know, tell stories and stuff that happened, things that I didn't know.
It'll be a good show. Mm-hmm. I won't be here for it. But it'll be a good show. I'll catch up later.
Okay.
Hey, the votes are in as we take one quick look back at Sunday's win over Oakland. The votes are in for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. We want to thank you for voting. It is powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. Votes have piled in, and this week's winning player, Logan Thomas, wins it with 33.5% of the vote. LeSean McCoy, 32.5%. Matt Milano, 21.4%. Tyrod Taylor, 12.6%. Logan Thomas, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. He got the game ball in the locker room on Sunday. You can vote the morning after each game at BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page, and you'll learn more there. Logan Thomas, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. When we come back, we'll hear from Tyrod Taylor, his thoughts on the Jets and how his last couple of games have gone, and we'll get to your phone calls about this trade deadline day, 4 o'clock today, and the deals that have been made and how they impact the Bills. All of that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Bills practicing over in the at Pro Sports Training Center. They leave tomorrow for the game in New York against the Jets. 8:25 kickoff. You can hear the game on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, and up and down the Bills Radio Network. You're eating a pretzel.
Yeah, I was trying to finish this pretzel. That five-minute break we have. That five-minute break just goes by just too fast. We need a longer break. We need, like, one more minute.
Well, or one less pretzel.
Or that, yeah. I only got two out of there, but it took me all of 5 minutes to eat those two.
Let's take a few phone calls. We want to know from you about these trade deadline deals. It's been pretty fun. Garoppolo gets traded. Ajayi gets traded. Dwayne Brown got traded. That doesn't impact the Bills. But do they have an impact, a positive impact on the Bills' playoff chances? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Dave calling from Attica. Dave, are you in Attica?
Not the prison, no.
Okay, you've heard that before. It's a bad joke.
How you guys doing this morning?
Great. Excellent.
Got to listen to us, Dave.
We're doing great, Dave. Are you there?
Good. My question is, I'm a Bills fan. I love the Bills. I love the game of football. I don't understand why they trade for draft picks and not get somebody in return. That's where I'm lost. Is it a financial reason?
Yeah.
That's part of it, right?
Part of it.
Contracts, it's hard moving contracts around. Yeah. I mean, look, Dave, I think, and I'll let Donald answer this too, we're breaking new ground here with all these trade deadline deals, even for draft picks. For years, this trade deadline went past without really any movement at all. There is a new breed of general manager, maybe some new thinking in the league. And, I think it's mostly financial. It's hard to take this contract that maybe you don't like and assume somebody else's contract, even for half a season, and make it work in your group. There is still, even despite, you know, more trades, still the argument of disruption and trading players adds a little bit more of that. And maybe that'll come, but I think this is a significant first step to that type of thing.
I think it's a combination of, number one, it's always going to start out with financials. You know, you have the financial aspect of it. And then you have the team aspect of it, you know, which is why I think a huge part of the reason why the Bills decided to trade away Marcell Dareus. You know, you have his contract, but then you had just the team concept. So down in Miami with Jay Ajayi, you have, you know, the whole team concept and does he work hard enough and all of that stuff. You have the injury side of it, you know, and then you have, which I think that trade down there is kind of reminds me of a Sammy Watkins. But then you have a guy in Jay Ajayi who was in his last year of his contract, you know, and so it's like, okay, should we just let him go now, you know, because he's going to want big money. Should we just let him go now and get something in return, a draft pick in return, or should we just let it play out, let him hit the free agent market, and we don't get anything in return? So I think that's how we had Mike Jannetty on yesterday, and that's what he was talking about. You know, these general managers now are looking at their salary cap and everything involved with it, and they're thinking a lot different than they used to.
Yeah. There's more calls on the trade and the trade deadline. Jerry calling from Lancaster. Hello, Jerry. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, guys. Happy Halloween.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
I was just wondering, hypothetically speaking, if we went and picked up T.Y. Hilton or traded for him, what impact that would have with our offense and the pros and cons of his salary.
Right.
And also, I was wondering if there's any significant difference between recent success with head coaches as far as being offensive-minded and defensive-minded, as far as, like, what the past five, six head coaches that won a Super Bowl, what the ratio was. I'll hang up in the
Okay. In terms of the T.Y. Hilton, Murph, you can. I'm going to look up T.Y. Hilton's contract.
Okay. And his second issue, Jerry's, was about do more offensive coaches or defensive coaches win the Super Bowl or have success, I guess. Was that in relation to the trade deadline? I wasn't quite sure what he said.
I never really paid attention to that.
Yeah, me neither. And I think, I don't know. I don't think there's any real trend. If there were, people behind, you know, it varies, right? That sometimes they hire offensive coaches, sometimes they hire defensive coaches. I don't think there is any real trend on that.
In terms of T.Y. Hilton, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a guy who he's making $8 million this year. He had a $2 million signing bonus. He's going to account for about a $10 million cap hit, $14 million in dead cap money, right? So we would have to have a capologist like Giannitti on
right.
to explain his entire contract again. But on the field, I would say this. He is a true deep threat. And that's what they use him for out there in Indianapolis. They just haven't had the quarterback that can truly, truly get him the ball since, you know, Andrew Luck has been down. But at the same time, would he change the offense here? I think he would play right into what Tyrod Taylor does best, and that's throw the ball deep, mm-hmm. you know. But at the same time, when you want to throw, you want to have a deep threat. You need to have a deep threat on your team. But now when you have that deep threat, knowing that Tyrod Taylor likes to throw the deep ball, does that hurt your offense? You know, because now you have a guy who I know I can throw this ball deep. He's probably going to catch it. Now he's not looking at anybody else on the field.
Yeah. It's almost too late to kind of restart that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I don't know if – look, they're going pretty well, obviously, through the first – almost first half of the season. Do you really want to redo the offense? Can you use other pieces? Maybe. Maybe, but you really want to, you know, redo the entire offense when it's right. going pretty well right now? I don't know about that.
T.Y. Hilton on spot track, you know, he has a potential out in 2018 and only a $4 million dead cap. But in 2018, he has a base salary of $11, $19, $13 million. In 2020, a $14 million base salary. So, you know, you're talking about some big wide receiver money there.
Yeah. Here's Michael in Buffalo on the line with us. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, I was just calling because I feel like the Bills should go after, like, T.Y. Hilton, but also, like, Landry, since he's available, and I feel like trading like a third, fourth round pick for like either or is worth it because they're two number one compared to Jordan Matthews, who's like could have the potential of one, but he is a number two.
All right. I think I'd rather go with, and this has nothing to do with, for me, the personality of Jarvis Landry and what he, you know, the whole hit on Aaron Williams.
I got some issues with that.
I know you have some issues with that.
I do.
But I think in terms of what you need on this team, Jarvis Landry is a guy, he's really a possession receiver. You know, he's not a true deep threat. That's why they use Kenny Stills down there as their deep threat. Jarvis Landry is more of a guy who catches the ball underneath and turns into a running back, you know. And so can he be a playmaker for you? Yeah, but I think in terms of what you need, you have possession receivers on this team. You would need a guy if you wanted to bring a receiver in, a guy who can go down the field, deep down the field, and that's T.Y. Hilton.
All right, thanks for your call. We're going to break. We'll take more phone calls. A lot of people ready to talk about the trade deadline, as are we. We also have a game coming up on Thursday, the Bills and the Jets. We want to talk about that, including, you know, the matchups. And we got a lot more ground to cover today. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
And it's time for Milestones presented by Units Upstate New York Transplant Services. Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, 11 rushing touchdowns. Now with sole possession of second place for most rushing touchdowns by a quarterback in Buffalo Bills history, he passed Joe Ferguson, who had 10. Jack Kemp holds the team record with 25, different era, obviously. Tyrod Taylor, 11 rushing touchdowns, including that one Sunday. That's Milestones presented by Units. Save lives. Join Team Units. Donate blood. Visit units.org. John Murphy, Donald Jones, live from One Bills Drive, talking about Sunday's game, or Thursday's game. And we're talking about the trade deadline as well. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Chuck calling from all the way in Los Angeles. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, how you doing, John?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Really quick. First of all, look, the Jets are the team that everybody wants to play right now. I'm sorry, but they're playing like they got nothing to lose. But like you said, a three-game losing streak, that's like tied for second in the NFL. Okay, and them losing Ajayi didn't make our chances better. If they had Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith in their best days, we'd still beat them. Everybody just needs to realize that the Buffalo Bills are finally playing stout defense like the 1990s Bills. We don't need another receiver. We have the exact team that we need. We don't have time to get other players acclimated. And one more thing, John, you are the Vince Scully of football.
Oh, wait a minute. Vince Scully's 90 years old, man.
No, not in that.
That's what you meant. That's what you meant, Chuck. I like it.
Hey, Chuck, did you see, I'm sure you did, you're out there in L.A., Vince Scully throwing out the first pitch last week?
Oh, God, it was amazing.
Amazing. It brought tears to my eyes. Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was great. And then Fernando comes out, right? Steve Yeager came out.
You know, Chuck, I'm always interested about L.A. and the sports in L.A. and the fan bases. Now, I know the Dodgers. People love the Dodgers out there. Are you a Dodgers fan?
I am. I'm a Dodger fan.
So are you? So you're probably tuned in. Because, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, but I feel like a lot of people have kind of tuned out. And it's been, like, great World Series games, but –
This one got away from me now. We're already game six tonight.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that. Last year I was into every game. And I had no rooting interest, but this year it's just I think I'm working too much now.
You think so?
I think I'm working too much on Bill's stuff because I haven't watched the World Series game yet.
But last year you did.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where I found the time last year.
We need a win on the next game. If not, we're out of it.
Yeah, Verlander, though, right? Tough to go against Verlander for
Houston.
Yeah,
it is. Trust me, as a Yankees fan,
that guy's too.
But, yeah, thank you for the compliment. I'm not quite there. I love Vince Scully. I used to, and he's been out for a year or two now, Chuck. I think it's the second year where he's been retired. But I used to listen to Vince Scully on Sirius. One of the great things about satellite radio, you can pick up virtually any baseball game anywhere, and I'd listen to Vince Scully driving around. Felt like you were right there. Just the best.
You know, the best. Obviously, it's a different era. But listen to a bit. Like, it's hard for me to watch a baseball game on TV. To listen to it on the radio, it just seems even harder to do.
No, it's the best. It's really, if you're not there, it's the best way to get into the game. If you got a good play-by-play guy like Vince Scully.
Like Vince Scully, yeah.
Or Ernie Harwell. Or
he just seems to have a great personality. Like, even just watching all of his comments and everything as the first, he was about to throw out the first pitch.
Yeah.
He just seems like he had a great personality.
He did a lot of NFL football, too. He did a lot of NFL football.
Like radio play-by-play?
TV, CBS. TV?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Speaking of, and back to Chuck's original point about this is the team you want to play, there's this, Donald, and this is coming out today. Jets wide receiver Jeremy Curley is being suspended by the NFL for an undisclosed violation that is confirmed. The Jets play against the Bills on Thursday night. So without Curley, the Jets will use one of their two rookies, Chad Hansen, or Ardarius Stewart, as the number three receiver behind Jermaine Kearse and Robbie Anderson. Jeremy Curley going to be suspended, fifth-round pick of the Jets in 2011. Released by the 49ers, where he had some decent production, and then came back this year. I think he came back right before the Bills game, right? Back in week one.
Yeah, Curley, he did. They signed him right before week one, and they brought in Kearse at the same time, kind of. They brought both of those guys in. But, you know, to the caller's point, everybody wants to play this team. I don't know how true that is. You know, I just think that the Jets are playing hard. They are playing like they have nothing to lose. And they're losing games, close games, you know, and like games that they really should win. They have calls going against them. I just don't know if, as a player, looking at the Jets, that all the players are like, man, this is a team that I want to play.
If you go through 31 opponents, possible opponents for the Bills, the Jets would be one of the top three or four I'd put on the list of who I want to play. I really would. I mean, you know, there's some talent deficiencies there, Donald.
See,
there really are.
First off, you always have even if you feel like there are some talent deficiencies, you always have – this is a divisional game, and it's a primetime game, and it's a short week for both teams, you know? And so –
Well, you got to play. You got to play somebody.
You got to play somebody, but when it's a divisional game, those games are always – like, it's rare that you just blow out divisional opponents. The only team that does that is
– I'm looking for a win here, man.
I know.
Who would you rather play in the division? Would you rather play the Patriots Thursday night? No. Would you rather play the Dolphins Thursday night?
Right now? Mm. Wow, that's a good question.
Jets have lost three in a row. I'm not saying it's a pushover. I'm not saying, you know, don't worry about it. But I don't think they're that good. I really don't. And I think the Bills, if we're picking games, I'm picking the Bills to win this Thursday night.
Okay.
All right. We're going to break. When we come back, it's the Trey Hour coming up. Trey Elston, Bills safety, is going to join us coming off the practice field. Trey Wingo from ESPN sits down with Donald. So that's coming up in the next hour. Come on back to John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. Bills practice indoors today, and they just ended practice. Just a little bit more than an hour's worth of practice today as they take it easy, getting set for the quick turnaround game, getting set to head to New York tomorrow to play the New York Jets on Thursday night at 8:25. As far as injuries, Charles Clay, head coach Sean McDermott, says Clay will have a hard time making it back this week. Linebacker E.J. Gaines with his hamstring. They're still hoping he can play on Thursday. Safety Jordan Poyer, according to McDermott, had a good day yesterday, still listed as day-to-day. Ramon Humber, linebacker with his thumb, still listed as day-to-day. The update from practice officially will be out later this afternoon. The Bills and the Jets coming up on Thursday night. It's an 8:25 p.m. kickoff, and the game will be heard on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Jets likely to be without wide receiver Jeremy Curley for the game on Thursday. He will be suspended by the league for an undisclosed violation, according to league sources. A key loss for the Jets. Curley was their number three receiver and played on 55% of their offensive snaps over the first eight games with 22 catches and one touchdown. Trades on trade deadline day in the National Football League. Today, the Dolphins traded running back Jay Ajayi to the Philadelphia Eagles for a fourth-round draft pick. They traded him, according to the Dolphins, because they think his most productive games are behind him, fearing the knee issues that happened back in 2011 and an injury and surgery in 2011 are finally catching up to him. Jay Ajayi traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. Last night, Patriots dealt quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo to the San Francisco 49ers for a second-round draft pick. San Francisco had two second-round draft picks. Niners likely to sign or likely to cut Brian Hoyer, and the word is the Patriots are likely to sign Brian Hoyer. We'll talk with the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soci, about this coming up later in the show. Dwayne Brown traded from the Houston Texans to Seattle. The Pro Bowl left tackle acquired yesterday, sending quarterback Jeremy Lane to Houston in exchange. Sabres return to action for practice today. And the World Series Game 6 tonight, Justin Verlander looking to close the deal for the Houston Astros, who can win the World Series, their first one ever, with a victory tonight over the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Astros lead the series 3-2. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joining us in studio, just off the practice field, Bills safety Trey Elston. Hi, Trey. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
Did you bring your helmet up here, too, or sorry, bring it in the room?
I do. She had it.
Okay. All right. Nicole has it over there. Yeah, that's how fresh you are off the practice field.
Yeah.
A brief practice today, right? A little bit shorter than normal?
Yeah, just a little walkthrough, man. Just stay on our keys and everything, so fundamentally detailed.
It's got to be a short week, right? Because, I mean, I'm guessing it's Tuesday. You're 2 days removed from the game against Oakland, that you probably still have some bumps and bruises and feel it a little bit, huh?
Yeah, so like this week is a special week to take care of your body. So, you know, a lot of cold tub, a lot of rehab, and just getting your body adjusted to this Thursday game.
Now, you know, there are probably a lot of guys who still, obviously everybody wakes up on Monday and they're sore. You, on the other hand, play a certain way that you would be extra sore come Monday. So how do you feel after games?
I mean, I feel pretty good, man. Just a mentality thing. I feel like, you know, it's more mentally than physically. If you tell yourself you're all right and then you just do the right thing, you'll be okay.
What is it about your style? I mean, we saw this in training camp. You do seem to be out there looking to make an impact and make hard hits, right? And have you always played that well going back to college?
I mean, I don't say like I'm looking to make the hard hit. I'm just looking to make the tackle. So I'm just looking to make the play and trying to help the team.
But in a hard hit. Nah, you would be one of those safeties that, as a wide receiver, I'd be like, man, if this dude, like, he has to calm down a little bit, man. He's crazy out there. You know, you always got to keep your head on the swivel looking out for you out there.
Yeah, but I like to keep a level head, you know, just remain humble, you know what I'm saying? Because it's some big receivers out there too. So I don't want them trying to crack me, man, try to ear hold me, try to knock me out. And
I was
like
that guy. I was that guy. If you get a hard hit, and I know you're one of those guys that likes to hit hard,
yeah,
I'm looking to hit you. And so if I catch you just not paying attention, I'm taking your head off.
Yeah, I really don't want that, so I'm good on that.
We're with Bills safety Trey Elston, who got his first NFL start for anywhere against the Oakland Raiders last Sunday. I wondered how that game played out for you, and I know how it finished with the interception, but during the course of the game, did you find yourself kind of acclimating yourself to the speed of the game and adjusting, maybe even thinking, okay, I don't need to get a big hit, I need to be in the right position? What was your process going through that game last week?
I mean, the first drive, I was a little nervous, you know what I'm saying? First start, first time playing in defense, first NFL game, so a little, it jitters, you know what I'm saying? I'm nervous, but after that drive, I felt like, you know, I really calmed down and played my game.
You have been around the league a little bit, bounced around a little bit, right? So to get that start, to get that chance to play last week, at some point Sunday morning, did you think, this is big for me, this is a milestone for me?
Yeah, pretty big, man. Got a little teary-eyed, you know, but a very emotional moment for me, man. You know, I've been through a lot, so getting that start, you know, really it's a big moment for me, man. Yeah. Big moment.
And you probably had to balance those emotions against the job at hand, and the job included Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper and all of those guys, right? That was a pretty big task.
Right. You know, Michael Crabtree is a guy I used to watch, you know, back in the day. You know, I played receiver.
That's crazy you just said back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day.
You make me feel old. I came in around the same time as Crabtree.
You know, at Texas Tech, you know, A. Coop, I played against A. Coop, man, you know, at Alabama, Ole Miss. You know, we beat him twice in a row, you know, hottie. But,
Well, since you brought that up, I don't know if we had the picture, but when you guys beat Alabama, you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated?
Right. My senior year, yes.
What was that like?
I mean, it was a crazy moment. You know, everybody's, you know, sending me messages saying, like, oh, man, you're on the Sports Illustrated. I really didn't believe until somebody sent me a copy of it. Then I'm getting all these magazines sent to me, sent to my home and all that.
How many did you get?
Man, I got a couple of them. I don't know the exact number, but it's a lot of
wallpaper at home?
Yeah, I mean, I got a blow-up. It's real big.
Oh, you know what I'm saying?
He had like 100 of the same pictures across his wall.
What a great way to remember what I would think was the best win of your college career down there at Ole Miss, huh?
Yeah, I'll say either that or my junior year against Alabama. You know, junior year, everybody didn't expect us to beat them, and then nobody expected us to beat them twice in a row. So both of them, I mean, I love it.
And you were a teammate of the Buffalo native Chad Kelly down there.
Right. My dog, right? Chad, man. I love Chad to death, man. You know, he's a hard worker. He shows a lot of emotions, man. You know, a lot of people call him hothead, but he's a winner in my eyes.
Did you connect? Were you here or were you in Philadelphia when he was here with the Broncos this year? That might have been in your short stint with the Eagles, right? He came here with Denver.
Yeah, so I was here in Buffalo. And
you were here for that?
Yeah, right.
And we should talk about that, your interesting journey this year, right? go to camp with the Bills and then play, right, a couple of games, or on the roster a couple of games, and then released.
Right.
Was that one of the low points? I mean, you've gone through this before, but how did that feel back then?
I mean, like I said, like, you know, you get your highs and you get your lows, and, you know, anything negative for me is I'm going to be emotional about it. And, you know, because I love this game. I put it with my passion. I play with it with a lot of passion, man. And going to Philly, you know, you get another high, and then Philly released me and get another low. And then now I'm back here, so it's like another cycle.
But so you're not just back here. You got to come back here and start in a big game. So I can see why you're teary-eyed.
Right, man. You just got to stay level-headed. That's how I look at it. I always stay on that point, just trying to climb, man.
What was back to Sunday's game against Oakland for a little bit, to close it out with the interception? And it wasn't a great pass thrown by Derek Carr. Was there a second when the ball's in the air and you're thinking, I can't believe it's coming to me? Because it was coming to you. I mean,
yeah,
it was.
I mean, I thought you were going to throw it to Amari. You know, Amari was at the number three position trying to run up the seam. But I guess he was trying to hit Patterson on that number two. And I just came back on it. He kind of floated it. And, you know, it kind of breadbasket in my hands.
You know, as a receiver, if I'm Amari and I've been like that, where you're running and you look up and it's like, where is he throwing the ball? As a DB, do you say the same thing? Like, where is he throwing it? But that's coming to me. But what is he doing right now?
I'm just thinking about, hey, either catch this ball or knock this ball down. You know what I'm saying? Try to do my job.
You know, your DBs, man. You said you play receiver. So you probably have better hands than a lot of DBs.
Yeah, I do. I think I got the best hands in the secondary, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. He just threw down the gauntlet.
Coming out of Micah.
Right. Yeah, I'm about to say. He said, what, five interceptions?
Yeah, he got five interceptions.
It was Micah in the locker room Sunday, talked about your pick, but he also said you should have gone down. I told him that. He should have gone down, right? Did that come into your mind at all?
It popped in my head, but like I said, like a lot of emotions hit when it hit my hands. My eyes were just jittering.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, six, go get six. But – you know, it's a learning experience.
Yeah, and to reinforce the point that you should have gone down, you took a pretty good hit from the offensive lineman.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I tried to split him, and I guess I judged it wrong. But he clotheslined. I feel like it should have been a flag. Yeah. You know, he can't clothesline nobody like that. Yeah. But it's okay, though.
I wonder if he said, hey, you should have gone down.
Yeah. Said, hey, man, what you doing? That's how they talk. One of my friends played at Hampton, and he played safety, and he broke records at Hampton for amount of interceptions. But literally every single interception he caught, he would fall. Like, and I used to be like, man, what? Can
on
you
purpose?
Catch it? No, he just – it's like all he cared about was catching the ball, and then he just didn't have that let's go get six. You know, it was I just want to catch the interception. Now, for you, I guess because you played receiver, you had that mindset. If I catch it, I want to score.
Yeah, man, it's all about changing the game. You know, you get that pick and you score six, man, you change the whole game. So why not?
That game, it was notable to me for a variety of reasons, including the fact that you made plays, first-year guy. Milano makes plays, first-year guy. Tre'Davious is making plays for weeks now. There's a lot of rookies contributing to the success this team has had so far. How do you account for that?
Man, like I say, it's just details, man, details and fundamentals. And then just playing with your heart, man, passion. Like I said, a lot of us play with passion. And you put the fundamentals and the details into it, you'll be all right.
You know, what was it like on you were on the sideline when Brandon Tate caught that ball, you know, spun out, came over to the sideline, big, you know, first down on like second and 20, and everybody just went crazy on the sideline. You ever been a part of a team that has done something like
that? I mean, a lot, man. Like I said, if anybody makes a play, man, you got to show their emotions. You know, I like to see other people make plays. And, you know, I see somebody else make plays, make yourself want to make a play, you know what I'm saying? So everybody on the sideline gets that energy going. So everybody's got energy now. That's what I like about a team, man. If you show a lot of energy, it shows chemistry.
It looked like y'all were having a party over there. Like it was music that only you guys could hear, and everybody's dancing and stuff.
Yeah, that's good, man, because like I said, if it's positive energy going on, can't nothing go wrong.
Trey, as you mentioned, you got to get your body right going into this game. It's just a couple of days away, and when you get there, you're going to face some pretty talented receivers, you know, and Robbie Anderson in particular and Jermaine Kearse. What do you think of this Jets offense and that receiving core?
Man, I respect them a lot. You know, a lot of speed, and they got way, way better than week one. So, like I said, like they like to throw bombs, and McCowan's a very experienced quarterback. Man, I respect him a lot.
Right. Now, for a safety, you have a team that likes to throw bombs. I would think as a safety, like I might be able to get some picks in this game because they're throwing it up for you.
Right. I mean, like I said, like McCowan's going to give us a shot. I mean, hopefully. So, but like I said, you just got to play your game, man. If he does, you got to take an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And McCowan, like I said, I respect him a lot. I was with him in Cleveland, man. He's a great, passionate guy. He's a great leader. Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to you to play, you know, after you get your first NFL start, you come up with your first NFL pick, and now you get to play in primetime? There'll be people all over, including, I'm sure, hometown people for you from Alabama watching this game, right?
I mean, it feels great, man. Like I said, you know, my family's a great support, and everybody back at home, I know they'll be watching, so I just got to do my job, man, do good.
Now, going back to what made you go to Ole Miss, you're from Alabama. How come you didn't go to Alabama?
I mean, I just wanted to get out of the state. You know, I had a best friend. He went to LSU, and I feel like my opportunity at Ole Miss would have been good, so I took advantage of it.
No regrets about that, I would think.
No regrets.
Okay. Well, Trey, it's great to have you in here. Thank you. We made the big play on Sunday. We appreciate you taking some time after practice to come on in and talk with us.
Man, thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Trey Elson, Bills safety in his first year out of Ole Miss, came up with the interception the other day. The Bills off the practice field, and earlier today before practice, Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor was talking to the media, and he talked about how he's trying to have a more conscious effort to stay in the pocket. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's just a natural feel of the game. If you look at some of the way teams are rushing, they're forcing me to stay in the pocket. I mean, like I've said before, we have a bunch of playmakers out there that if I can get the ball to them, they'll probably get more yardage than me just running. So just knowing the down and distance, when I can use my feet to move the chains to do that, but in the same sentence, also getting the ball down the field to the guys that can make plays.
You took a lot on yourself after that Cincinnati game and the bye. So what was your focus from that point to playing as well as you have these past two? What's kind of changed, or where did you concentrate on?
More so just the things that we were doing right, just trying to correct the things that we didn't do so well, talking with coach, getting a better feel for some of the schemes that we were having success with, and trying to find a way to get those called. As far as me personally, just refocusing and doing whatever it takes to put ourselves in the best, put our team and myself in the best situation to go out there and win games.
Do you feel your game is at what level do you think it is? Do you think you're playing the best? consistently that you've played? When you evaluate yourself, what do you
think? It's week to week, but I think I've definitely taken steps in the right direction. I think I've continued to keep building each and every week, and that's my focus. I'll be better than I was the week before. Different situations are going to come up in different games, and I think that we've done a great job of winning those situational battles. We can be better, but that's definitely something that I'm focusing on.
Tyler, do you feel I think you've always had confidence in yourself, but do you feel right now maybe you're playing your best football as a Bill, just based on the offense, your confidence, how you feel in the system? Is this maybe the best you've played, you think?
I'm comfortable in this system. And just got to continue to keep taking steps forward. I think as a team, we're finding the things that we do well, getting Shady going, as well as putting the receivers in the best situation to go out there and make plays. As far as the confidence level, I've always been confident, like you said. But as you get more and more comfortable with the offense, you find things that you can do, and you stretch yourself to be better.
You mentioned Shady. How important is it to get him going again against the 27th ranked run defense?
That's very important. Anytime you can get Shady going in the running game, it opens up things in the passing game for me. And as well as it gets his confidence going, he starts to make bigger and bigger plays in the run game and in the pass game. So it's definitely a conscious effort to get him going each and every week.
What's it been like to, you know, 1 week it's Deontay Thompson, 107 yards, the next week Brandon Tate's making a big catch on second and long. What has it been like, and how have you been able to adapt to these new receivers that seem to be, you know, I mean, Brandon's been around, but just to adapt to these guys who've been on the field and getting them the ball, knowing how thin that position is?
First and foremost, it's been fun to see those guys come out and make plays. They work their butts off throughout the week. And like coaches preach week in and week out, just compete on the field, and things will carry over to practice, to the games, and that's what they've done. Like you said, it's been a different guy, and that's pretty much been the story of our team this whole year, offense and defense. And guys are stepping up to the plate, accepting the challenges head on and going out there and playing at a high level.
Tyrod, I know you guys embrace the underdog role, but how much of an opportunity is Thursday night, prime time, when the game on, to show the rest of the league what this team is all about?
It's a great opportunity. Night games give you just a different feeling. Of course, when you know everyone's watching you, you look forward to those moments. And even with the short week, guys are preparing hard and looking forward to this opportunity to show the other team what we can do, but as well as show the people that are going to be watching. Everyone's going to be tuned into Thursday Night Football to show that this team is real.
And what's the challenge, especially for a quarterback, to do the short week preparation? And heard other coaches and quarterbacks say that maybe there's more simplified approach just because you don't have as much time to really dive into things for a game. Is that true with what you guys are doing?
The preparation is definitely key. As far as us going out there and executing a game plan, it's definitely things that we're comfortable with. Don't try to mix in too many new things. You want guys to play free and play fast out there. And with the short week, like you said, you don't get a bunch of time to install a lot of things. So it's more so of us just redefining the things that we do well and going out there and executing.
Does it help that you're playing a team that you've already seen once? It's a short week, but you've already played them one time, week one.
Yes. Anytime you get a chance to play a team for the second time, it's definitely it's pros and cons. This team that we played was week one, so it was some new faces that we haven't seen on the back end. But through a couple games, you've got a chance to get a feel for them on tape. And this team has been playing very well. And looking forward to the matchup, to be honest.
What do you see different in the Jets from week one to what you're looking at now on film?
Just a more confident group. Like I said, there were a couple guys on the back end that were new. I know they've been banged up a little bit, but just more confidence. Those guys are going out there and competing at a high level. They've been in some close games over the past couple weeks, and they've played very hard. So it's definitely going into their home field, they're definitely going to come with a different type of attitude, and we have to set the tone early.
It seems like forever ago, that season opener, but I'm not sure if you recall. You've got Rex Ryan on ESPN going on saying, I'm not going to even watch this game. There's better games on TV, and how people were referring to it as the tank bowl or something like that. Do you get a kick out of thinking back then to what was being said about this game, and how validating, and how is it to be at 5-2 right now for this team?
Honestly, that was the first time I've heard that. But it really doesn't matter who watches the game. If no one watches it, we still have to go out there and play. And as a team, we're excited to go out there and take a challenge and to move forward to 6-2. We definitely have to bring our A game against a team that's competing very hard week in and week out. So it's a challenge for us. It's a challenge for both teams, but we're preparing and getting ready for it.
Tyrell, when you talk about your growth, the deep Andre Holmes play, you talked about it on Sunday, what was happening. It looked like you wanted to go to the post over the middle. You caught for a minute and went there. To be able to have the composure, sit in the pocket, recognize it's not there, move to the next read, and it wasn't the cleanest pocket ever, to throw that ball, and maybe I'm making too much out of one play, but that one play, to, again, have the composure to see one thing wasn't there, go to the next thing, and hit it on time with a heck of a throw for your development. How big a play was that?
Well, it's progress, and I have to continue to keep making those steps in our offense for our team to be successful. It's definitely one of the plays that stuck out to me last week, but it was a great catch by Andre, first and foremost, for him to tap his toes in and still maintain the catch to the ground. But it's definitely progress, and like I said, I got to continue to keep progressing.
On that play, what did you see as you were going through your progressions? Because from where we were sitting, the angle could barely see you. With all the bodies around you, and then the ball just kind of popped out. So what did you see in terms of
Yes, it was a two-shell defense. I wanted to hit Logan around the safety. At the time, it's normally a backer there, but wanted to hit him around 39. But the free safety closed in, and then I knew it was covered too. We was able to get Andre. He kept his route alive up the sideline in the corner slow played, and we was able to go over top.
Tyrod, as players, how fun is it to see this town kind of buzzing after the performances you put together this season? The excitement that's building for this team, right?
The fans do a great job of creating a fun atmosphere on Sundays to play. As far as the buzz around town, it's always good when you win. It's our job to continue to keep preparing and doing the things that we're doing on game day to keep that field going. And as a team, we welcome that challenge, and we look forward to going out and playing each and every week.
You guys recognize that, in past years, and you recognize as a team that – the city is buzzing, and you say, hey, let's keep the city up and going and buzzing. You got a football game there. Do you think about the fans and try to make
I personally don't. I appreciate the fans, and I love their support, but I don't necessarily get tied emotionally into their feelings. We have a job to do, and it's our job to go out and compete at a high level. Things are going to go your way sometimes, and things aren't, but you aim to win every game, of course. And like I said, that feeling just makes everyone feel good. So, who doesn't love the feeling of winning?
The offense didn't flinch when Sammy got traded or Anquan retired. What do you make of how the defense responded to, losing a guy like Marcell Dareus?
I think the same approach. Guys continue to keep their mind focused. Yes, it was right before a game, but like you said, we didn't let it phase us as a team. And defensively, the defensive guys didn't let them phase them as well. They went out and played a heck of a game this past Sunday. And I just think the leadership on that side of the ball definitely speaks. It says a lot about those guys as far as just keeping everyone focused.
Tyrod Taylor meeting with the media earlier today. Hey, Donald, I meant to ask you this. The Dareus trade happened Friday night, and, you go in there and you look for stuff like what might be going on. Does it matter to players when there's a trade like that, Marcell Dareus, or upheaval like that? Would it impact the game? We mentioned it earlier with Ajayi and the Dolphins.
I don't think it will impact your game. It will impact, the night before. It happened
Friday night, right?
So it'll impact your thinking for the weekend. But once you get to Sunday, it's like it's time to go. It's time to play, and so it won't impact your play on the field. And it's not like he was playing 100% of the snaps and making crazy plays for this team anyway. They have been winning games with him getting 40% of the snaps or something like that. And so as much as we talk about Marcell and everybody knows the talent that he has and all of that stuff, I think the trade of Ajayi might affect that team more than the trade of Marcell did this team.
Yeah. Hey, practice is over, as we talked about with Trey Elston a minute ago. Chris Brown, Bills insider, BuffaloBills.com, is working the locker room right now, and he just tweeted out, Jordan Poyer says he thinks he'll be able to play Thursday night against the Jets. Mm-hmm. That would be something if he could. That would be, a little bit ahead of schedule for the Bills. And our buddy Sal Capaccio says that Ramon Humber, linebacker, he's telling reporters in the locker room right now that he plans on playing.
Right.
couple of interesting developments. You know, the official practice report, participation report, is probably an hour or two at least away, and that would be the official word, but at least those players sound pretty optimistic, and that would be a boost for the Bills.
It would definitely be a boost for this team, and I was interested to see, you know, if those guys would play this week or if they would let them rest this week and just prepare for the Saints next week. Now, obviously, all games are important, and you need to, especially when you're divisional games, you know, but on a short week, and when you have a team that, you know, has shown that they can win without these guys, it was like, well, do you want these to, you know, necessarily, I guess, rest these guys and get them ready for next week right. against a Saints team that's, what, 5-2 right now, or 6-2, one of those two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was, you know, my thought process, but from what these guys are saying, maybe they're going to play Thursday night.
And it's important to note that it is the coach's call. And they might feel that way.
Right.
And the coach might think like you did, well, let's give it another week and a half mm-hmm. and be sure that you're ready. And not that they're overlooking the Jets, but
right,
you can see
right.
why that would be. Right. There's this, too. LeSean McCoy, who had the big game, what, 150 yards against the Oakland Raiders. He is one of the nominees this week for the FedEx Air and Ground Players of the Week. The other nominees include Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Matthew Stafford, Melvin Gordon, Alex Collins. All of them nominees for the FedEx Air and Ground NFL Players of the Week for Week 8. You can vote. You can vote for this week's FedEx Air and Ground Players of the Week. The voting is open until Thursday at 3 p.m. You can go to NFL.com/FedEx. You can vote on Twitter using hashtag Aaron Ground and the nominee's last name. So LeSean McCoy, you can vote for him as the FedEx Aaron Ground Player of the Week. It's been a busy day, a busy couple of days in the NFL with the trade deadline. 4 o'clock today, quiet here at One Bills Drive today, but other stuff's happening. Donald had a chance to talk with Trey Wingo, our regular Tuesday visitor, who is the host of ESPN's NFL Live. Trey Wingo and Donald Jones coming up on the show when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle!
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown. There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, much to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Donald Jones. We have a crazy, crazy trade deadline today. And we got a special guest on the line, our weekly Trey Wingo appearance, the host of NFL Live. He's going to be hosting Golic and Wingo in the next month. Trey, how you doing?
Good, McDonald. Crazy, crazy times, right?
It's crazy times. Have you ever seen a trade deadline like this?
No, never. I mean, going back to, you know, the Bills getting rid of Darius, and then you got Dwayne Brown going to Seattle, the huge bombshell last night with Jimmy Garoppolo going to San Francisco, and now Jay Ajayi. Going to arguably the best team in football in Philadelphia. So this is crazy, and we're not done yet. So, I mean, this is normally on the trade deadline in the NFL, you get a seventh rounder for a bag of footballs or a used tee for some Gatorade. That's normally what you get. So this is very unusual, but it's a lot of fun.
It's definitely a lot of fun. So let's start off with the most recent trade, the blockbuster this morning. Jay Ajayi goes to the Eagles for a fourth-round pick. First of all, what are the Dolphins going to do without Jay Ajayi?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, they have Williams there who they like a little bit. But remember, after that Thursday night loss to the Ravens where they got shut out for the second time this season, Adam Gase used the word pissed, and he was ticked off. And he said, it's not that we're not good enough. We're just not doing our assignments. And people need to understand that you need to be held accountable. You need to do stuff. So clearly, not only is he getting rid of Jay Ajayi, he's also sending a message to that locker room that everybody's expendable and I'm the big boss. Basically, Donald Ross, the owner, has given him carte blanche to do what he wants. So, you know, Jay Ajayi's a very talented football player, but they clearly felt like he might have been one of the people that wasn't buying into what Adam Gase was trying to do and wasn't being 100% committed, and they let him go. And now Philadelphia, by the way, gets a really interesting situation because, look, LeGarrette Blount will still be their short yardage back, but the other thing is that, you know, if you're Smallwood, the other running back for Philadelphia, I'm thinking you're seeing your carries go down a little bit because Jay Ajayi is going to be the featured back on the team with the best record in the NFL.
Now, I want to talk about the Eagles as well, but going back to the Dolphins, you have a team that's sitting there and they feel like they can, you know, at least make a push for the playoffs with their record right now. And I understand, you know, you want to send a message throughout your team, but what message do you send when you let go of, you know, arguably one of the best players on your team and one of the key parts of your offense?
Well, you know, any coach will always tell you that if you want to send a message to the entire team, it has to. It's how you deal with your superstars. And clearly, what he's saying is that nobody's above my wrath. Basically, mm-hmm. You either get on board with me or you're out of here. Now, yeah, you could make a very compelling argument that one of their best players just walked out the door. The other thing that's part of this, which will be interesting, the Eagles get him for basically nothing, a fourth-round pick. Well, not nothing, but, right. I mean, you know, not a huge thing for them because they had plenty of picks left over from the Bradford trades and everything else. But basically, they get to see whether or not they think he has a lot left in his knees for a couple of seasons because he signed through 2018. And there are some concerns about how much longer JHIE can go on those knees, which he's had problems with. So, you know, it's a situation where Philadelphia gets maybe the best 2 years that JJ is going to have left, and they get him for a very small price. So that's the win here for Philadelphia.
And I think it is a win for Philadelphia. You have a team that everybody was already talking about is maybe a lock for the Super Bowl. Still very early in the season, but now you'd have to think, man, this team is definitely going deep in the playoffs and maybe to the Super Bowl.
Well, look, this is the most week-to-week season I can remember mm-hmm. in the NFL and doing this for a long time. There are teams that look great. You know, the Denver Broncos look great for the first 2 weeks, and they have looked terrible since. Right. The Saints were 0-2, and they won 5 straight with defense. Who saw that coming? So, yeah, right now I'm all in on Philadelphia, but I reserve the right to change my mind the way this season has played out.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so let's move on to last night's trade. And the Patriots made a surprising move to me. They traded Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers. I mean, it has to now say that they think Tom Brady can play well into his 40s.
Well, it is a very interesting roll of the dice, isn't it? Because essentially right now, there's no backup quarterback on the roster. Now, we believe that eventually Brian Hoyer will get there from San Francisco. However, it's Tom Brady and others at the moment. Now, and the others mean nobody. Look, I am never going to sell short on Tom Brady. But if you're the Patriots, what you're basically saying now is that we believe what we're seeing from Tom Brady at the age of 40, we can get for 2, maybe 3 more years. And is it certainly possible? Absolutely. But you are also betting against history. The only 40-year-old quarterback to win a playoff game was Brett Favre. And that year in 2009, he won one and lost one, and he lost one he should have won when he threw that late interception in the NFC Championship game against the Saints. So you are basically saying that all of his recorded history when it comes to quarterback play is not going to be a factor with Tom Brady. And look, I understand why you would want to make that bet. I also understand why that's a very risky proposition, because all it takes is one big hit. I mean, eventually Father Time catches up. Eventually it does. I don't know when it will, but eventually it'll catch up to Tom Brady.
Now, another trade yesterday, Dwayne Brown leaves the Texans and goes to the Seahawks. What'd you think about that trade?
Well, if I'm Dwayne Brown, I'm like, couldn't you have just done that while I was here so I'd have to fly back and forth? I mean, we just played a game. Just leave me here, man. It was pretty apparent with the contract situation that it didn't work out with Dwayne and the holdout, and it's all, and also with his very pointed comments about what Bob McNair, the owner, had to say using the line, you know, inmates run the prison, which is the worst mess-up you can use, because the analogy is inmates running the asylum.
Right.
And that's the phrase, which would have been probably not well-received, but considering that kneeling was about police brutality and social injustice, to use inmates running the prison was literally the worst thing he could have said. So, you know, obviously there were a lot of factors going in there. I think it's a win for Seattle. I mean, look, that's the biggest weakness on that team. There's no question about it. It's their offensive line. Russell Wilson had 30 yards of the Seahawks, 33 yards rushing in that win over the Texans. And going into the fourth quarter, they had 1 yard rushing.
Right.
So they've got to shore up that offensive line, and the biggest weakness for Seattle just got better.
You know, one of the reports came out that, you know, Dwayne Brown, his whole holdout wasn't just about a contract. It was about him not wanting to play for Bob McNair.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of history back and forth between him and the owner. So, look, this was a big win for Seattle. And, you know, Houston's obviously, they have a lot of weapons. I don't know if they have a better left tackle than Dwayne Brown, right. But they're going to have to figure that out now.
All right, so I guess we got to go back to Friday now, and the Bills traded Marcell Dareus down to the Jaguars for a sixth-round pick. What'd you think about that trade?
Well, look, the rich get richer in terms of the best part of the Jaguars team is their front seven. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's been a problem for them has been their run defense. I mean, we see all the sacks. They're only the fourth team ever with two double-digit sack totals in a single season. And so that wasn't an issue. They weren't great against stopping the run. Well, Marcell Dareus is going to be a big part of making sure that shores up quickly. You know, Jacksonville's a really interesting team. And now, with the Jimmy Garoppolo trade to San Francisco, the idea of where Kirk Cousins goes is going to be really fascinating this offseason. What about Jacksonville?
Right.
What about Cleveland? What about Denver? What about all these places that you know have a lot of things in place, but their quarterback issues and their quarterback play isn't great? Kirk Cousins is going to have a very interesting offseason now, I promise you that.
Yeah, his offseason is definitely going to be interesting. And what'd you think about that trade of Marcell going to Jacksonville on Friday, before the Bills played on Sunday? What'd you think Friday when the trade went down?
Dareus has been a guy that's sort of been hit or miss with you guys up there. And he got that monster contract, and he wasn't really performing at a consistent level. And it clearly didn't bother Buffalo on Sunday, man. That might have been the best game the Bills have played all year long, because it was a team they should have won, and they did it in ways that they haven't won this year. Shady looked like Shady for the first time really all season. But the most important thing, Donald, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, is you saw production from the wide receiving corps.
Right.
You know, Zay Jones got some passes. Andre Holmes had that great touchdown. He had three catches. It wasn't just Team Oval and the tight ends getting stuff done. And, you know, they got the turnovers. But most importantly, the running game was solid, and they got production out of the wide receivers, which has been something that has been really missing so far this season for the Bills.
Yeah, I think all Bills fans were happy to see this offense now start to move the ball for the last 2 weeks, you know, and hoping that it can continue into Thursday night. The game last night, Monday night game, Chiefs and Broncos, the Broncos quarterback situation coming into the season, we all thought it was going to be Trevor Siemian, and he had that job locked down, but it seems like now there might be some changes.
Yeah, look, and I want to be clear. Trevor did not play well last night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that might have been his worst game of the year. He was throwing off his back foot. It felt like he was waiting. It felt like the pressure he was anticipating getting hit sometimes when he wasn't hit. But changing the quarterback will not solve the Broncos' problems. Trevor Siemian's play is a symptom, not a cause. The first 2 weeks they were able to block, which meant they could run, which means Trevor could mix in play action to the passing game, and he was very effective. Their offensive line is in a shambles right now. Menelik Watson, their right tackle, has not delivered. Garrett Bowles is a rookie, and he's struggling. I think he's going to be good. So you really don't have a solid offensive line. If you don't have a solid offensive line, you can't run. And then you're asking Trevor Siemian if you can't run to be something he isn't, which is a playmaking quarterback that'll throw dimes all over the field. That's just not who he is.
Right.
If you have a running game and you can mix in play action, he was very effective in those wins over Dallas and the opening night win over Los Angeles Chargers. But, you know, now he's been asked to do things that he really can't do, and we've seen what his limitations are. They may make the move to Paxton Lynch when it's all said and done. But Trevor Siemian has struggled, but he's changing him will not change the Broncos' fortunes on offense. And if you're a Broncos fan, you're like, wait a minute now. We have a championship defense. I mean, I believe this defense might be better than the defense that won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And you have to wonder if that division in that locker room is going to be a problem. Like, hold on a minute now. We're doing our job. You guys just get a first down.
Yeah.
Score some points. You know, I think up until the fourth quarter, I think they had 13 points in their last 11 quarters combined. And that's just not going to get it done.
We have about 30 seconds left, Trey. Give me about two or three names that you think will be on the trade block that you wouldn't be surprised if they got traded today.
At this point, who knows? I mean, this is crazy right now. I mean, this might be, again, the most active trade deadline I can remember maybe in the last 20 years. So if Ajayi can go, you know, maybe somebody else is going to go from Miami too. I really could. And people talk about Larry Fitzgerald, but I don't think he's moving.
Right.
I think that Larry wants to stay in Arizona. He knows what he signed up for, and I don't think Michael Bidwell, the owner, wants to part ways with him because he's meant so much to that team in that city.
Trey, thank you for coming on. It's always good to have you on our Tuesdays. We look forward to talking to you next Tuesday.
You got it, Donald. Take care.
All right, thank you. Trey Wingo, host of NFL Live, soon to be host of Golic and Wingo in the next month over on ESPN. We'll be back on the other side of the break.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy, Donald Jones. Hey, New York State Lottery, inside the numbers as we look back at Sunday's win over Oakland. LeSean Shady McCoy went over 150 yards rushing for the first time this season against the Raiders. Over the last five seasons, McCoy has racked up eight games with 150 yards or more rushing. That is the most in the NFL, eight games with 150 yards or more over the last five seasons. That's New York State Lottery, inside the numbers. Take a break from the expected, play scratch-off games from the New York Lottery. You and Trey Wingo had a lot of fun talking about all the trades. He's right. It's been said before. There's never been a trade deadline day like this midseason in the NFL. This is nuts.
I mean, we haven't.
It's unbelievable. It's fun.
I think we're truly transitioning into a new type of NFL, where these GMs and these coaches, they feel a certain way about players on the field, in the locker room. The finances come into play, injuries, all of that stuff, and they're not afraid to pull the trigger and try to upgrade their team or just try to build for the next season.
You really think it's the influence of Madden players?
<They could be.
laughs> I can see it.
You never know. I mean, you do have some young coaches now, and you have some younger GMs, and you're going to continue to get younger with the GMs. I think we're starting to see that trend. And you will have some guys that have probably played some Madden in their days.
It's crazy.
Some fantasy football and just making trades. Who's out there in the waiver wire? Let me make a trade.
Here's a call from Mike in North Tonawanda. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Okay, guys. Just wanted to say a couple things. Tyrod Taylor has seemed to improve a great deal in the last couple weeks. And the biggest thing I see is his pocket awareness. He seems to be more comfortable with his surroundings, even though he faces great pass rushes. But he seems to be aware of what's going on. He has a great escapability. And now he's making throws and plays that he should have been making all along. And I'm not picking on Tyrod. I've been frustrated over the years about some things. But, the guy is a good athlete, and he has a great effort. He puts out a great effort.
Yeah, Mike, you make some good points, and it's something – actually, I wrote about it for a post, the top seven storylines. One of the storylines to me over the last couple of weeks is Tyrod's improvement. And, look, I was one of those guys just as recently as a couple of weeks ago saying, all right, we know Tyrod now. He's got 36 starts. We know who he is. We know how he plays. But the last two games, Donald, he's kicked it up a notch. And now here's the thing. It's not reflected in his stats.
Mm-hmm.
What did he throw for, 175 yards?
165.
165 yards. It's not about stats. I mean, obviously, he doesn't throw interceptions. We know that. That's continued. He has a good completion percentage the last couple of weeks. And I'm not saying this is, the way going forward, but it is worth mentioning, as Mike picks up on, maybe a different style of play from Tyrod. It's not measured in stats. Rick Dennison talked about it yesterday, said he's more comfortable, more confident in what he's doing. I see it. It's not going to be something that you say, oh, Tyrod hasn't had a 300-yard game yet, though. And I get that. Maybe that's not who he is, but something's up with him. I think he's finding a new level to play offense.
I don't think that's who he is. I don't think that's what this offense is, because you don't have – like, they're deep. When we talk about the deep ball for this offense, I mean, you had a play this past week with Andre Holmes, which was deep down the field. I think when Charles Clay comes back, he can be another deep guy down the field. But their deep type of routes are like deep overs, 20 to 25-yard over routes, and that's really them going down the field. That's kind of how they get their big chunk plays in the passing game. And so with all that being said, I don't expect to see – the big bombs and everything down the field. That's how he would go up over 300 yards. Tyrod Taylor is a quarterback that is going to get you from 150 to maybe 250 yards on a very, very good day, or a day where they truly had to throw the ball a lot. If this offense is playing like, and the team in general is playing like they want to play, he's not going to throw for that much because they want to run the ball. It means that they're playing ahead. They want to stay ahead of the chains. They are not trying to put him in the position where he has to throw the ball to win the game. We need to put this whole game on Tyrod Taylor's shoulders. It's not that type of offense, and so I don't ever expect to see in this offense Tyrod throw for 300-plus yards.
And to be clear, I'm not saying that he'll play like this every week. Obviously, there's nine games left. There's going to be ups and downs, but it is noticeable, I think, the last 2 weeks, an uptick in the way Tyrod Taylor plays. Sean McDermott was asked about it today. Tyrod seems to be playing better, and McDermott was asked what he sees, why Tyrod might be playing better the last 2 weeks.
I just go back to really, Vic, the communication we had over the bye week, the communication we've had since that time. Tyrod is a young man that takes his job extremely seriously and takes a lot of pride in what he does. He's a man of faith, and you know, he continues to be himself, and that's what's important. He's true to himself, and he continues to grow in ways beyond the field, and that's important for our football team.
He does seem a little bit better the last couple of weeks, and seems a little more. I'm not going to say focused; he's always focused, but confidence, as the caller Mike said, a little bit more confident.
And I think that's big. Yeah. It's his confidence. It's his confidence in himself. But I think it's the guys on the field with him, the guys that he's been around. Most of the guys that he's been around since the spring. You know, it's not the same situation as last year where you had a bunch of guys that came in the middle of the season. You know, he has his guys out there, and he's trying to let these guys make plays as much as he can.
And as usual, when you get talking about Tyrod in these parts, people want to fast forward to the end of the season and the decision to be made and what will happen. We talked about it on the show yesterday. We're as guilty as anyone. But McDermott was asked today, I guess the inevitable question when it comes to Tyrod, has he done enough to lock down the quarterback job here long term? Here's what the head coach had to say.
What Tyrod's done, I know what Tyrod's done up to this point, is what I saw when I got here. And I keep going back to, in my mind, the vision of what he went through at the end of last year, right? And the rehab process, when it's dark, it's snowing outside, and Tyrod's coming in here rehabbing. And, you know, that was made a statement, and I hadn't been around Tyrod personally up close, but I thought that was, for a first introduction of watching a young man work, and the way he approaches, as I mentioned earlier, his job, his passion, and the just the type of man I was dealing with, that you know, it said a lot about him. And so that's what I've seen play out this year on the field. And you know, there's he's certainly had a lot of good moments, and there's been, like myself, there's been some moments that he wants back as well. But that's part of the process and the growth that we are having as a team, is, and it's at every position, you know, not just the quarterback position.
John McDermott, he's not going to answer that long-term question yet.
No.
Nor does he have to, because I don't think they're in position to make that decision yet about Tyrod long-term.
It wouldn't make sense. Yeah. Well, I mean, why are we even talking about that? That's probably what he's thinking. No, I'm not us, but he's probably thinking, what are we talking about right now? Right. We're 5-2 and trying
to. We got a game in 2 days.
Yeah, we got a game Thursday. It's Tuesday, and you guys want to talk about Tyrod Taylor in the future after the season?
Yeah, we'll get there.
What are we talking about?
We'll get there. But it was interesting, and I do think, as I kind of wrote about on the website on 7 Storylines, there's been an uptick in his play. I think it's pretty noticeable.
I mean, I think it is noticeable. I think, for me, he's just being efficient. For me, he's taking, you know, last week he threw one to Nick O'Leary down the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I think
Jordan
he's
Matthews over the middle.
Right, exactly. So I think, you know, he's even showing signs of sitting in the pocket a little bit longer, you know, and willing to – certain plays he'll sit in there and even take a hit sometimes and make the throw. You know, other plays, you know, it'll break down on him. But I think he's showing more confidence, and I think it's truly just the guys on the field with him. He trusts those guys.
Speaking of quarterbacks, what's the deal with Jimmy Garoppolo? Patriots ship him off to San Francisco. Yeah. We'll get that trade from the Patriots' perspective when we return. Bob Soci, our good buddy, is the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. What's the trade mean for New England? Who do they got at backup? What happens if Brady gets hurt? All of these questions coming up for Bob Soci. Also coming up in the final hour, we'll hear from safety Jordan Poyer, who's telling reporters that he might be able to play on Thursday against the Jets. And we're going to have Donald Jones and his nuts and bolts as he breaks down some more of Tyrod Taylor's game. All of that coming up in the third and final hour of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Bills had a brief workout today and a brief week, an accelerated week with Thursday Night Football just 2 days away. It does not look like Charles Clay, the Bills tight end, will be ready to go Thursday against the Jets. He'll have a hard time making it this week, the quote from Sean McDermott. Linebacker or cornerback E.J. Gaines with his hamstring, still hoping that he can play on Thursday night. Safety Jordan Poyer still day-to-day, according to McDermott, although Poyer told reporters in the locker room that he thinks he might be able to go. We'll hear from Jordan Poyer coming up later this hour. The Bills going up against the Jets, and the Jets probably going to be without wide receiver Jeremy Curley. He's being suspended by the NFL for an undisclosed violation. A key loss for the Jets. Curley was their number three receiver and played in 55% of their offensive snaps over the first eight games of the season. Bills-Jets Thursday, 8:25 p.m. from MetLife Stadium in the Meadowlands. More NFL news. The league has decided not to suspend Dolphins linebacker Kiko Alonso for his hit on Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco last Thursday night. Spokesman said the league has reviewed the matter. There will be no suspensions for Alonso for the hit. He was given a 15-yard penalty at the time. Marcell Dareus met with the media late yesterday in Jacksonville. The former Buffalo Bills defensive lineman saying that he was shocked by the trade, said, "I still haven't gotten over it. I'm shocked for the trade. I'm shocked for this defense, this team." The two-time Pro Bowl selection for the Bills, the first-round pick for the Bills back in 2011, traded away last Friday, says it feels good to be wanted. Jay Ajayi traded away by the Dolphins today. That talented running back goes to the Philadelphia Eagles for a fourth-rounder. And Jimmy Garoppolo last night went from the New England Patriots to the San Francisco 49ers. Sabres off until for a couple of days until Thursday. They return for practice today. They play Thursday in Arizona against the Coyotes and head to Dallas for a game against the Stars on Saturday. In World Series, Game 6 tonight, the Houston Astros on the verge of their first World Series victory ever. They'll put Justin Verlander on the mound against the Dodgers, and the Houston Astros lead that series 3-2. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones from One Bills Drive on a rainy afternoon here in upstate New York, and on the line with us live, a man who's familiar with fall days like that because he grew up in upstate New York, right down the road in Auburn, New York. He is the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, and we're happy to have Bob Soci on the line with us. Bob, you know what it's like up here, and you probably went out trick-or-treating in Auburn on very, very many rainy-slash-snowy nights over the years, right? Right? I can just see you.
Oh, you bet, John.
You were
absolutely
dressed up like Gil Santos most of those days, weren't you? No?
Well, I might have been Bob Murphy in those days.
Mets fan, I gotcha.
Yeah, hey, yes, sir.
Bob is on the line with us, the play-by-play voice of the Patriots, to talk about the trade last night, the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, which seemingly is fitting into a pattern this year. Bob, are you surprised by all the activity on NFL trade deadline day?
Well, I think this has been, in the words of Adam Schefter, I believe it was, citing a source in the NFL, the most active trade deadline that he had ever experienced. And I can concur, at least in my brief experience in the National Football League, John, going back to 2013, and even as a fan. You know, I always enjoy the trade deadline, the non-waiver deadline, speaking of baseball, around July 31st, because there always seemingly was a flurry of activity. And as a fan, you'd have these expectations of maybe that last missing piece that could help your team to a pennant. And that has been lacking, it seems, for the most part, in the NFL. The trade deadline is generally produced a few obscure deals. The Patriots, typically, the last few years, have gone out and acquired a piece here or there, whether it was a Jonathan Casillas from several years ago, or Akeem Ayers, or last year, Kyle Van Noy. But the kind of blockbuster deals we're talking about, and it started really with the Dareus trade, going over to Jacksonville, and now you've got this final rush, it seems, to the deadline to see, you know, who's going to top the Dolphins sending Ajayi away, or the Patriots, you know, with Garoppolo to San Francisco. Is there another domino to fall? And, you know, you think about, you know, some of the names that we're talking about. And we're talking about a guy who was a featured back for a team to get to the playoffs last year, and a quarterback who many here consider the heir apparent to Tom Brady.
Like you said, you did consider him the heir apparent to Tom Brady. So last night when that trade happened, first of all, were you hearing the rumors about it, or was it a total shock to everyone in New England?
You know, Donald, it was not anything that we had, you know, heard any speculation about since the start of the season, or really since the draft. Of course, there was a lot of speculation in the offseason immediately after the Patriots won the Super Bowl that Jimmy Garoppolo would be available if the Patriots got a deal they couldn't refuse. I mean, I think that was conventional thought. And then around the time of the NFL Combine, a couple of reporters who had earlier engaged in some of the speculation about what Garoppolo might net, foremost among them, the aforementioned Schefter, said that it was clear the Patriots had no intention whatsoever of trading Jimmy Garoppolo. They wanted to hold on to the quarterback, and he would start the season on the roster, and that's exactly what happened. Listening to Bill Belichick today on the conference call, and again trying to read into his comments, or at least you know, fill in the blanks in what was not being said, he talked about how much he respected Jimmy and how much he valued him as a good person, a good player, a great teammate, and how he couldn't have asked Garoppolo to give the organization any more. And then Belichick discussed, in his word, the complexities of the situation on multiple fronts, that he felt the Patriots had the best quarterback situation in his mind in the NFL, but it was unsustainable, and that they explored every possible option to sustain it. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as it turns out, yeah, it's a tough decision to make, because you've got Tom Brady at 40, and in Belichick's words, again, a player reaches a certain point where he looks more or less to maintain. There might be slight improvement in tangible ways, but more or less maintain his level of performance, and then it becomes year to year. Well, Brady's case has kind of been year to year since they drafted Garoppolo, mm-hmm. with Tom coming off a somewhat disappointing 13 season. He's gotten better at 14, 15, 16, and is having a good 17. So it's been a difficult dilemma for them. It appears there are reports that they tried to work out a deal with Jimmy. That wasn't possible in the end. And so in the last window, again, using Belichick's words, that they had, they made this deal with San Francisco. And it was a stunner. It was a shock for me, and I think for a lot of people, even those of us who kind of expected him, or at least considered a strong possibility in the offseason, that he might be traded.
Bob Soucy, our guest. He is the play-by-play voice of the Patriots, talking about the trade last night, Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers in exchange for a second-round pick. We were bouncing this around in our office here today, Bob. How much more, if anything more, could the Patriots obtained in a trade for Garoppolo if the trade had been made back in January, February, around the time of the combine or before? What do you think?
You know, John, there are any number of reports out there that you probably still find by, you know, checking the timelines on Twitter or Googling. And even some speculation today, of course, what they could have had. There was some thought that the Patriots could have received multiple number one picks. And I think a lot of people tried to connect the dots, and I was guilty of it to some degree. Back in the spring prior to the draft, when the Browns had this surplus of picks and had a couple of first rounders and were searching for a quarterback, and Hugh Jackson apparently has made it clear through some members of the media, at least that's what's being reported by Mike Silver, among others, that he wanted Garoppolo. But you know, you go back to that time frame, and a lot of people were trying to make the connection. Were the Browns lining up their ducks to make a bid toward Garoppolo? And again, it was about that time when we got word through Schefter and others that Garoppolo was unavailable. But you still wonder what might have been discussed back then. I haven't heard John Lynch's comments. I was just actually on a radio station, and a caller had made a reference to something Lynch had said about ongoing discussions. But, yeah, I think the feeling here is that maybe the Patriots could have gotten more from the fan base, but I don't think that there's anything substantial or concrete other than presumptions made by people that they could have gotten more back in the spring. I really believe that, you know, they like Garoppolo. This was not a case where, you know, they gave him up because they didn't see the value in the player. They had an opportunity maybe to work out a deal where they could have kept Jimmy on a short-term contract, enabling them to make a smoother transition. You know, there are reports that, you know, that wasn't, you know, as it turned out, a possibility that, you know Garoppolo's side didn't engage in, or at least ultimately come to that kind of a decision. So, you know, I think ultimately what it comes down to is that, you know, they had to make a choice, one or the other. And, you know, rather than flop a franchise tag on Garoppolo and commit, you know, $40-plus million and pay him, in essence, twice the salary as Brady next year, they had to make the move now before the trade window closed.
Hey, Bob, now, if I'm a Patriots fan, and I know so much is being talked about as, you know, the successor to Tom Brady in the future, and Tom Brady has said he wants to play well into his 40s, maybe 45, something like that. And I understand all of that stuff, and he looks good right now. But you all know in this league, you're one hit away from your backup having to come in and now play multiple games for you and win those games for you. And so if I'm a Patriots fan, it's like, now what? Like, what about this year? What happens if Tom Brady goes down?
Yeah, Donald, that's a great question. And that's led some to speculate. And I'll be honest with you, I've thought about this myself, is that, you know, the way this team has played, they're 6-2, but it's been an uncharacteristic Patriots team, and there have been disappointments to get to this point, whether it's an individual performance or, frankly, the collective effort. You know, they went out and they made a splash in the offseason, and thus far, you know, some of those moves have not panned out. Rikone Ely was a guy they traded a second-round pick for, and he was cut by the time the preseason ended. Stephon Gilmore's had a tough period of transitioning to the Patriots' defense on the field, and, of course, he's coming off a third straight game that he's missed due to a concussion. And this team that we thought was so deep, you know, back in March for what that was worth, suddenly it appears thin. And, you know, maybe this is a situation where, you know, there was a feeling that, okay, if Brady doesn't win us a sixth Super Bowl, can Jimmy do it? And, you know, is the team around him good enough to think that way, hold on to him simply as an insurance policy in the event that Tom goes down? Or, you know, in this case, you know, as risky as it is, do we give up our current backup quarterback, given the makeup of this team, and, you know, think about acquiring a draft asset for next year, but also possibly, I mean, we still have some time to go before the deadline arrives, you know, go out and add a piece that this team needs to get to where it ultimately wants to go.
Hmm. Bob Soci, our guest, the play-by-play voice of the Patriots. Bob, how good is Jimmy Garoppolo? We saw, you know, the two games, the start of last season, 2-0, and what, four touchdowns, no interceptions. How good is he? What do you think the ceiling is for him?
You know, John, I think the ceiling is high. Of course, we're saying that based on, like you said, six quarters of work. And a lot of it is, frankly, you know, based on the intangibles that you get a chance to experience when you're around somebody on a regular basis and the things you hear from his teammates and coaches. Jimmy Garoppolo is extremely personable and likable. I think he was a very well-liked and well-respected guy in that locker room. Very intelligent. Somebody who came in, learned the system, you know, with really a huge learning curve very quickly. We're talking about a guy who played in Dino Babers' system while at Eastern Illinois, mm-hmm. and fans who watch Syracuse know about that. I mean, he was operating in the shotgun. There were no calls. There were no protections of the line of scrimmage. And everything was turned to the sideline, you know, get the signal, and then run the play. And, you know, so much of it was schemed and not requiring the quarterback to read defenses or, you know, drop back even from under center, 5-7-step drops. And Garoppolo had to learn all that and at the same time grasp the Patriots' offensive concepts and develop a rapport with his teammates. And then he steps in the season opening stage in prime time, and he's got this enormous pressure, one would think, of trying to fill in for Tom Brady, and he plays very well against the Cardinals, makes a huge third down play in that game under duress, Danny Amendola. Now, it's a play that will stand out for me as one of his best throws. The following week, he's off to a scorching start against the Dolphins. Really looked terrific in that game before Kiko Alonso knocked him out with a right shoulder injury. And he was not seen from or again on the field in a meaningful situation the rest of the way. So based on what we have seen and, you know, what we've observed about him and heard from other people, you know, you think that this guy's got a very bright future. As we know, though, there have been a lot of quarterbacks about whom such things have been said, you know, based on the limited sample size and depending on the situation around them. You know, he goes to San Francisco where that team is going to rebuild. He should fit well, one would think, in a Kyle Shanahan system. You know, Bill Belichick said, you know, Jimmy's going to get a great coach today. And I think that Garoppolo probably believes that, too, going out there. They'd spent a lot of time together in the draft process, Shanahan getting to know Garoppolo. So I think he'll be comfortable from that standpoint, but he's not going to have the supporting cast in San Francisco that he had last year when he was throwing to Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski and Davide Amendola and Martellus Bennett, you know, the first couple of weeks of the 2016 season.
Hey, Bob, you know, going back to the spring when all of these rumors about him being traded came about, you know, I had a lot of conversations with different people about, is Jimmy Garoppolo a system quarterback? Has he just found a way to fit into that system and learn that system? Or is he truly a very good quarterback that everybody wanted, everybody who was trying to get him back in the spring? What do you think about that? Do you think that he will fit? Well, do you think he's a system quarterback, or do you think he can go into any system and be good?
Well, Donald, here's the things about Garoppolo that you like. Other than, as I mentioned earlier, the character of the individual and, you know, the intelligence, he's got good footwork. He has a very quick release. He throws the deep ball nicely. He's a guy that, you know, again, developed chemistry with his teammates. Even I've heard that, you know, players who left here and went to other organizations, you know, before Jimmy really got his opportunity, were raving about him and the ball that he throws. He's also relatively short. And, you know, in his situation, He's athletic. We haven't necessarily seen him in New England show off tremendous mobility. I mean, you guys saw a little bit of Jimmy Garoppolo running some read option in the 2014 regular season finale, but that was far from the product that we saw start 2016. So there is that athleticism there. But, you know, again, standing back in the pocket and in a different offense where maybe the ball doesn't come out as quickly or there aren't those quick throws available to him like there typically are in a Patriots offense, you know, maybe then it's a bit of a different story. And, you know, maybe then, you know, you see where Garoppolo is susceptible to some of the mistakes we've watched in practice periodically. And that would be trying to force a ball into traffic or making a poor decision here or there, being unable, you know, to, if not recognize, you know, a certain coverage, at least, you know, not having the wherewithal or the sense that a guy like Brady displays so consistently where, you know, you throw it away to live for another day. I mean, he's kind of got a little bit of that bravado in him where he'll try to force a throw here and there, but that's, again, only on the practice field. We'll see what happens in the game.
Patriots are always interesting, Bob, and no, they are, and it's kind of weird. We got to wait another month before we really dive in deep. I mean, they're not going to play again, Bills and Patriots, for 4 weeks from this Sunday. It's going to be a while.
It is, and it is a strange year, you know, from that regard, John. Usually we see you guys up at Orchard Park by this time. And, you know, it's always one thing or another year, and there's usually a lot of drama that surrounds this team. And this year has been, you know, it's been a strange season. You know, again, going back to the splash move they made with the Gilmore signing, completely uncharacteristic, you know, based on precedent for the Pats. And then during the course of the season, you know, from all the talk about Garoppolo, Brady, and what the future might be leading into the season, and now all of a sudden here we are at the midseason point, and, you know, what people had kind of put to bed suddenly, you know, is the most talked about thing in New England and maybe the NFL right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, this team, again, has some issues to address. I'm, you know, really impressed with what the Bills are doing with McDermott and the way they're protecting the ball and winning games. And it's going to be really impressive. Yeah, really interesting to watch you guys on Thursday night. Very interested in that game. And when we do eventually see it, there should be a great atmosphere, especially in Orchard Park.
Yeah.
Bob, I have one more question. You started to talk about Gilmore. What's going on with Gilmore? There were reports that he left the stadium last week. I guess he's been hampered by he's been dealing with this concussion. What's going on with him out there?
Yeah, Dominic, no, it really first started with him in the first four or five games of the season in terms of the communication or lack thereof at times with the other members of the secondary. I thought Stephon played really well in preseason and training camp especially. We saw a really competitive streak from him. But in the first several games, Patriots uncharacteristically gave up a lot of big plays, and it really was at its worst when they played the Carolina Panthers. And you had several breakdowns that seemingly, you know, happened to occur on his side of the field, especially with motion, bunch formations, you know, some of those rub plays where you had multiple defenders going in one direction and nobody home and guys being left wide open. And he's been under tremendous scrutiny. And it's compounded by the fact that Malcolm Butler is a restricted free agent, and the Patriots did not extend him to a long-term deal in the offseason and then went out and allowing Logan Ryan to go to Tennessee via free agency ultimately. You know, they made this big splash signing, committing $65 million over the lifetime of the contract to Gilmore. So he came here with huge expectations, but also, you know, the undercurrent is, well, why didn't they give that money to Butler and Ryan? What kind of adverse effect could it have on Malcolm Butler and you know, how he, you know, feels about his situation in New England? Because ultimately, you know, he had to sign the restricted free agent tender from the Patriots, and he's here at least for the rest of this season. So the combination, I think, of the money he's been paid and the performance up and down. He did play well in a man-to-man situation for the Patriots for the most part against Mike Evans when the Pats went to Tampa Bay. But thereafter, he's had the lingering headaches and the concussion that's kept him out of a few games. Some people believe that maybe, you know, the decision on Sunday was more of a precautionary step to have him ready in 2 weeks. But with the nature of head injuries, as we know, you never know. But it's been a tough situation for him so far, you know. And again, the most encouraging performance he had occurred just before he was absent for the last three games.
Hey, Bob, thanks for making time for us today. We appreciate it. We'll see you in about a month or so. Thanks.
Hey, Murph, thanks for having me. Always enjoy being with you guys.
Thanks. Bob Soci, the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, talking about last night's trade of Jimmy Garoppolo to the San Francisco 49ers for a second rounder. The Bills, with more immediate concerns, the Thursday night game, just 2 days away now, the Bills and the New York Jets. Jordan Poyer had a big game in the season opener against the Jets when he had a sack and an interception in Buffalo's 9-point victory. Jordan Poyer, who's been out now for a couple of weeks, talked to the media today about possibly coming back on Thursday night. He also talked about how the Jets have improved since the Bills saw them back in week one.
They're a lot better. They got a couple more players out on the field that we didn't see the first time. You know, they're a good football team. You know, they got some, you know, obviously a veteran quarterback that can manage a game, that can win football games, and that's very smart. And so, you know, and he's got guys around him that he's able to get the ball to and make plays. And so, like I said, we just, you know, play sound football and technique sound and fundamentally sound, you know, we'll be all right.
Last Sunday you had a chance to step back, kind of watch it all. Mm-hmm. And as great as the turnovers are and as game-changing as they are, what was your kind of assessment of watching the pass yards kind of stack up again?
Yeah.
What can you guys do to maybe tighten that up and give them less?
I think just communication. You know, obviously the turnovers are huge. Anytime, you know, we're able to take the ball away three times, four times in a football game, you give your team a chance to win games. But, you know, I think a lot of it just comes down to communication, which is something that we're continually getting better on. And, Thursday night, we believe that we'll be ready to play.
I apologize. I just got over here. What is just your assessment of your chances to play this week?
I feel pretty good about my chances to play. Excited about the opportunity that I'll have to get out there and play on Thursday night.
Well, that's news. Jordan Poyer says he feels optimistic about his chances of playing Thursday. He missed the one game against Oakland with a knee injury, and he says he's optimistic. We'll see what the coaching staff says.
It's always tough for a coach and obviously for a training staff because the player's always going to want to play, you know, and – this is competition. You have a team sitting at, 5-2 right now. They're trying to really make a run at the playoffs. He wants to be out there. He's been having a very good season. It's a primetime game against a divisional opponent. You want to play in that game, you know. So as a coach, you have to, you know, be smart about assessing what the player is saying himself, what the training staff is saying, and what you want to do with him moving forward.
We'll find out. There will be an update on the injury report later today and, of course, one tomorrow, I believe, as well as we approach Thursday's game. Want to hear from you. We just talked to Bob Soci for a long time about the Patriots trade. Of course, you got Jay Ajayi going from the Dolphins up to the Eagles. Our Twitter poll today, have those trade deadline deals improved the Bills' chances of making it to the playoffs this year? What do you think? I mean, it's worth entertaining anyway, maybe to a lesser extent New England because there's not an immediate impact of Garoppolo being gone, but certainly with Jay Ajayi and the way he ran against the Bills last year, you would think that has something to do with it. The Twitter poll, has the trade deadline deals, have they improved the Bills' chances of making the playoffs? We got a lot of response, more than 1,000 Twitter votes, and almost half of you, 45% or 47%, say, yeah, maybe they have improved a little bit. 28% say no impact at all. 25% of you say yes, a great deal. We'll talk more about that with you on the phone lines. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll hear from Shady McCoy, his session with the media today. Donald's got nuts and bolts on Tyrod Taylor and the effect of his scrambling ability. All of that coming up when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to One Bills Drive. Bills practice is over. Jordan Poyer telling reporters that he's optimistic about playing on Thursday, and we'll keep an eye out on that. We'll keep an eye on the injury report. We're just a couple of days away from the Bills and the New York Jets. The Jets likely to be without wide receiver Jeremy Curley, going to be suspended for an undisclosed violation. He is their third wide receiver. And trades we've been talking about. Jimmy Garoppolo goes from the Patriots to the 49ers last night. Jay Ajayi. I like saying that name. I'll miss saying that name. Jay Ajayi goes from the Dolphins to the Eagles today for a fourth-round pick. And one more trade, the offensive lineman from Houston, Dwayne Brown, goes to Seattle. This doesn't happen. This is not the NHL, Donald. This doesn't happen in the NFL.
It doesn't happen that often, or it really doesn't happen in the NFL. You don't see this many blockbuster trades.
Yeah.
You know, you see, as Bob was just pointed out in the last segment, you'll see some under the radar types of trades, you know, where it's like, yeah, we just traded so and so for a 6th round pick or mm-hmm. something like that. You don't see you know, starters, key starters like quarterbacks and like a key running back from Miami, Dwayne Brown. That's something that I kind of expected, you know, because he's been very vocal since back in the spring about playing for that owner and not wanting to play for that owner. And so, you know, that was a part of the reason why he held out. Obviously, he had the contract dispute. But, you know, that one was the one that it didn't really shock me as much. But to see all of these big blockbuster trades on trade deadline day in the NFL is just different.
It's different, and it's kind of fun. Hey, every Tuesday we set Donald loose with the Telestrator, have him do a deep dive into some of the highlights from the previous game. We do it every Tuesday. It is Nuts and Bolts, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Shop and save. Collect points every time you shop with Napa Rewards. Donald's got it down to the – he stripped it down to the nuts and bolts. And you're going to look at the Tyrod Taylor and some of his plays over the last week or two and how he's making plays with his feet. We always knew that was a big component of his game, but you break down a couple of plays here.
Yeah, and you know – as you think back to the game, Tyrod has been playing very good. You know, he's been buying time with his feet, keeping his eyes down the field and finding guys down the field. Now, the biggest thing is I've had people ask me a couple of times, what happens when the quarterback breaks contain? You know, and Tyrod Taylor hasn't been breaking contain as much. He's been buying time really within the pocket, stepping back a little bit. He'll spin around and do a bunch of things,
yeah.
But he's still kind of within the pocket. But when the play does break down, number one, you always have to have guys going, and so you always have to have one guy going up the field, a guy coming towards the sideline, and one, you know, more like in the flat or something like that. And so, you know, it's if you have a guy all the way down the field, that guy should be coming back towards the quarterback, running somewhat like a comeback type of route. So when you think back to the game in the last week, and I want to first talk about the Andre Holmes play, the touchdown this past week.
Yeah.
And Tyrod Taylor, you know, he did a good job of buying time, but at the same time, you know, he might not have had to buy himself some time in that play. So when you think back to the play, you know, when the play started, Andre Holmes was lined up to the right, to Tyrod Taylor's right side. And Andre Holmes, which you typically run this in the NFL, Andre Holmes ran like an end cut along the back line of the NFL. And as a wide receiver, you're always taught to run across that back line. Now, Andre Holmes did a very good job of running that in cut. And when he came out of his break, the cornerback actually fell down, and Tyrod Taylor actually did have a clean pocket. He could have gotten him that ball if he threw the ball on time. But because he didn't see him, because he felt like the pocket was about to collapse on him, Tyrod Taylor actually, you know, he spun out, took his eyes off of Andre Holmes, and then he did a very good job at that point of getting his eyes back down the field and then finding Andre Holmes and lobbing that ball out to the sideline. And Andre Holmes did a good job of running the back sideline, getting over there, and obviously he ended up making the catch on the sideline with the toe drag swag that is just always so sweet when you get that toe drag, that swag, right? It's beautiful to see.
It was a great catch.
Yeah.
But you're saying that Tyrod wasn't I think he was going to get pressured eventually there.
Yeah, he could have gotten pressured eventually, but when you think back to the play, if he would have just gotten that ball out of his hands, the cornerback fell, you know, and so he would have been able to throw that ball before the pressure got to him. But he still did a good job of buying time and allowing Andre Holmes to run that back sideline, the back end line, and finding him and making the play.
All right, one of the plays he made, and some other ones to talk about too with Tyrod Taylor, where his feet make a difference. And we've known this about Tyrod, but it's been on display the last couple of weeks. As some people have pointed out, he's playing better now than maybe he has in his entire Buffalo tenure, and you've got evidence of that, right?
Now, this is the play, and when I was saying, you know, sometimes he'll break contain and get outside the pocket. Other times, you know, he's kind of running around within the pocket. And the play to Brandon Tate was somewhat like that, you know, where – as a fan watching, it's like, uh-oh, what is he about to do? Because he looks like he's getting a little skittish. And then when you think back to the play to Brandon Tate, which everybody has talked about just because of what the guys did on the sideline after Brandon Tate made the catch. But when you think back to Tyrod Taylor and what he actually did, when that play started, Tyrod Taylor was standing in the pocket. He was looking. He was trying to find a couple of guys. He had Nick O'Leary, who was actually about to come open. He had Logan Thomas, who was covered up, and Tyrod Taylor, he just didn't feel comfortable with those throws. And so, you know, he did a good job. As he felt, somebody was about to actually I think it was Bruce Irving. Bruce Irving was about to grab him on his shoulder, and Tyrod Taylor felt that. And so Tyrod Taylor spun out like he did in the other play. He spun out, but he also, once again, got his eyes back down the field, and he found Brandon Tate just sitting in the middle of the field. As the thing opened up, Brandon Tate was just sitting there. He found him, and Tyrod did a good job of making that throw. And then the rest was just all Brandon Tate, right. The spin move. He set this, you know, the one guy up, cut off of him, and then went to the sideline. That was another good play.
You know, the thing about spinning out, Donald, a lot of quarterbacks will slide step,
yes.
and always keep their eyes downfield. We've talked about two plays here where Tyrod did not do that. Could mm-hmm. that ever come back to haunt him, do you think?
It can come back to haunt him, because anytime you take your eyes off the field, off the receivers, you know, there could be somebody coming open,
yeah.
you know, and you can make that throw. So when you're taking your eyes off and you're actually spinning all the way around, then you have to get your eyes back down the field and assess the field before you make a throw. You might see a guy who's open, but you can't see a linebacker or a DB coming across the field or something
yeah,
like
and
that.
Little amount of time it takes.
Exactly.
To spin,
and we know in this league, these guys move fast.
Yeah.
They get to the spots fast, you know. So you really want to just slide step and keep your eyes down the field so that you never really have to you never have to locate everybody again.
But again, there's a pattern here of Tyrod using his legs mm-hmm. to set up the pass, and
yeah.
he's been really good at it the last few weeks.
He has. And in this play that I'm about to talk about was back in the Tampa Bay game.
Okay.
And this play was beautiful because he actually did step up in the pocket and slide step and then find Nick O'Leary on the sideline. And so when you think back to that play, this play, he was actually getting some pressure, you know, and Tyrod did a good job of, as the pocket was about to collapse on him, he had guys coming in. He did a good job of actually stepping up into the pocket. But once he stepped up, it was either step up and run, because he had one more guy that could have come free and made that tackle. He actually did a good job of stepping up and stepping out to his left and slide-stepping that one defender. And once he did that, he was able to then locate Nick O'Leary on the left sideline, which he did a good job of locating him. Nick O'Leary did a good job of staying where he was supposed to be. And Tyrod made a good throw on the run, and Nick O'Leary ended up picking up. It was like 20-something yards on that play. Yeah.
It's got to be difficult, really difficult to be a defender trying to deal with Tyrod.
It really is. I mean, when you watch.
It's really brutal to try to defend him.
Especially D linemen, right? Because they get so excited, they're about to get a sack, and then all of a sudden he's gone. He either spins out of it or slide steps you, or he just outruns you. And you see guys diving at his legs and Tyrod like high-stepping, and then he makes his throws down the field. It's fun to watch, but I know it's difficult for those guys.
All right, that's Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones. He does it every Tuesday, and it's presented by Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Bills Jets coming up Thursday night at the Meadowlands in New Jersey. LeSean Shady McCoy spoke with the media earlier today and talked about how he has had some pretty good games on Thursday nights. Here's what he had to say.
I mean, it's a normal game. The cool thing about it is everybody is watching the national game, and anytime you get to have a chance to perform on that stage, you know, you want to do your best. So we look forward for that matchup. It was a good game, you know.
That does motivate you personally. You know that everybody else is watching.
I think so. I think because we actually wear our best, I guess, uniforms. You know, you try to put different tape on and different colors to stand out. So it's something that you get up for.
Sean, from a team standpoint, you guys relish the role of the underdog, but you're in the spotlight this week. How big of an opportunity is it to show the rest of the league what this team's all about?
I think what's more important is just a division game that we must win. You know, we beat them already earlier in the year. They're playing a lot better as a group. You know, so we got to get this win. It'll be big for us. Go up 6-2 in our division. You know, so I think that's more important, probably bigger than just everybody in the world just seeing, you know, what we do. You know, man, we've been the whole underdog, I guess, each week is like, oh, man, is this team for real? You know, they won another one. Are they for real? And we don't care to answer that question. You know, each week we just want to play hard and get a win.
Kind of along the same lines is that, what's it like to think about the fact that the last time you guys played them in week one, some people were deeming this as like the Tank Bowl almost, and now look at where you guys are.
Yeah, I kind of forgot all about that. Those are opinions. You know, I could care less about people's opinions. But we do know that they're a solid team. You know, a lot of the loss that they do have, in the fourth quarter, they had the lead. You know, so this shows you that they're not a tank or a cupcake team at all, especially in their defense. And their defense is loaded.
They are 27th against the run. You guys had 190 on them in the opener. How important is it to keep that going, what you've been doing lately?
Yeah, last couple of weeks we've been rolling in the run game. We're going to keep that going. I think if we get on them early, you know, and put the pressure on them, our defense just plays where they've been playing, you know, getting turnovers. Hopefully they get turnovers, don't score, get down to the one or the two and let us finish it. But, no, we just got to play hard the whole game. It'll be Thursday night. They'll be up for it, division game. So, I guess if they beat us, they'll kind of have a better chance, you know, in the division. So we got to make sure we take care of business.
Week to week, there's somebody different on the roster offensively that seems to step up. Almost guys taking and cherishing that no-name guys. You're obviously not one of the no-name guys, but how fun is it to watch the Brandon Tates, the Nick O'Leary's, Logan, yeah, guys like that
just
perform?
Guys getting opportunity. You know, I remember trying to just get my chance, you know, get out there and showcase what I can do. And these are great examples of guys coming in here each week, putting the preparation in. You know, Nick has to step in. Logan has to step in. They do a great job at it. Tate, who's a veteran, you know, an older guy, had a chance to play. You know, made a big play for us in a key moment of the game. So it just shows you the heart that everybody has on this team. You know, when the guy down is the next man's opportunity.
LeSean Shady McCoy meeting with the media a little bit earlier today. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. Hey, Coaches of the Week, I forgot to do that. The AdPro Sports Coaches of the Week. We'll go to Section 6. It's Glenn Graham from Cleveland Hill. The Golden Eagles of Cleveland Hill picked up a 24-7 win over Silver Creek in the Class C semifinals. Coach Graham's been at the helm there since 2004 and led that program to 4 Section 6 championships. In Rochester area, Section 5, our AdPro Sports Coach of the Week is Eric Werner from Hornell. He led the Red Raiders to their 26-7 win over defending champion Batavia in the Class B semifinal. Hornell 9-0 on the season. They advanced to the Class B final this weekend. The AdPro Sports High School Coaches of the Week winners. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What did we learn? Well, we had Trey Elston in the studio with us right after practice ended around 1 o'clock today. Starting safety for the Bills last week, came up with the interception for the Bills late in the game last week. He was released by the Bills earlier this year and went on to Philadelphia. And he talked about he's had some serious highs and serious lows already this season from the Bills and the Philadelphia Eagles.
You get your highs and you get your lows. And, you know, anything negative for me is I'm going to be emotional about it. And, you know, because I love this game. I put it with my passion. I play with it with a lot of passion, man. And going to Philly, you know, you get another high, and then Philly released me and get another low. And then now I'm back here, so it's like another cycle.
But
so
you're not just back here. You got to come back here and start in a big game. So I can see why you're teary-eyed.
Right, man. You just got to stay level-headed. That's how I look at it. I always stay on that point, just trying to climb, man.
Trey Elston, Bill's safety. We went from Trey to Trey today. Trey Wingo. Donald talked with Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. Talked to him about all these trades going on in the National Football League. Here's what Trey Wingo had to say.
Remember, after that Thursday night loss to the Ravens, where they got shut out for the second time this season, Adam Gase used the word pissed, and he was ticked off. And he said, it's not that we're not good enough, we're just not doing our assignments. And people need to understand that you need to be held accountable. You need to do stuff. So clearly, not only is he getting rid of Jay Ajayi, he's also sending a message to that locker room that everybody's expendable and I'm the big boss. Basically, Donald Ross, the owner, has given him carte blanche to do what he wants.
Heck of a message to be sending at midseason.
I think it was the wrong message.
Yeah? Why?
Because I think you sent the message that you don't really care about this season. And then you start to hear rumors about Jarvis Landry, regardless if it comes true or not, where there's smoke, there's fire, you know, mm-hmm. and that team is looking at you as the head coach like, what are you doing right now? You know, mm-hmm. why why would you trade away our best, you know, really where this team goes through, and that's the running back position down in Miami.
Donald, I'm off to the Jets tomorrow, to the Meadowlands of New Jersey. I'll be on the show with you Thursday with some segments coming from New Jersey, you know, setting you up for the show. But I'm a little jealous. You got a heck of a guest list already coming up for you tomorrow, right?
I told you. They only come around when I'm hosting the show. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people want to – they really, you know, I get all of these Hall of Famers because they want to be around me.
And that's Hall of Famers want to be around you.
That's right. You know, and that's kind of – I've gotten to be that big, and I'm proud of it, Murph. Don't – you know, haters going to hate. I just want you to know that.
I'm not a hater. No hate here. I'm excited for you. I'll try to listen to the show tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be good to talk to Jim and Steve and everybody else.
All right. That's tomorrow. I'll be en route to Jersey. Donald has the show tomorrow. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Brayton Wilson, our Entercom board op. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Donald here tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.